Welcome into the Cam and Strick podcast, episode number 141, baby.
Yeah, yeah. You're live from, where you at again?
Truckee, California.
Truckee. Sounds like a fucking hillbilly joint, but it's beautiful out there, man. How was everything? How was the boat ride?
The boat ride was fantastic. In fact, well, I mean, listen, I didn't know how easy it was to drive a boat, Cam. First off,
well, you had a pontoon boat. You had a fucking. I told you, a pontoon boat. You drive yourself. I just said I didn't want you to get in a jam with the three kids. I don't know that lake. I don't know how the swells are on that lake. I don't know how busy it is. You know, so it's like you better just fucking hire some cat if he's cool and just cruise. But how was it? Could you have just? How were the waves? Like,
It got choppy. Actually, yeah. We had a captain. He got this thing up to like 50, 55 miles per hour. We had a Chris Craft.
Oh, you had a Chris
Craft. 36-foot. Yep. Oh, we didn't have a pontoon.
No, you had a Chris Craft. Open bow. That thing was cool. That thing gets up and goes. Yep.
I wanted the formula. I mean, the guy next to us had the formula. Those things are absolutely really nice. Sick.
There's three different kinds of formulas. Derek has the one where it's fucking a power boat. Then you got the middle kind where it's like it has an underneath. It's bigger. Dude, they are really nice, but those are expensive as fuck. Now, hey, are you in the boats now after doing this shit? Like, did you want to tell that guy, be like, hey, dude, beat it. I'm driving.
No, he was cool. I'd rather have him drive, but he got a little crazy. I will say this. Like, he was trying to show off a little bit. I mean, like slow it down. I mean, I thought we were going to tip over a couple times. We were riding the waves. One time, Cam.
Sniffles again. What the fuck you been doing? Sniffle. Jesus, hey. You sound like shit.
Hey, we hit the waves so hard, dude, that the table, there was a table, it like broke, dude. It flew in the air like 30 feet because my daughter's like knee hit it and she like almost like jumped out of the boat.
You could fuck
it. It gets a little
up.
Wild, gets a little crazy in there. He needs to slow it down a little bit. He and I almost had to have some words.
Oh, really?
Throw him over there. No, I'm kidding. He was cool.
No, I was going to say, he tried, dude, wait a minute. Look, you can knock yourself out. I used to sit up the front on the boat and my dad would do that bullshit. And you're like, hold on. And you go, boom, wham. And you can't hold yourself. And all of a sudden, you hit your head. Like anybody that understands that when they're a kid, man, you get those times where the fucking, they come out of nowhere too, because a monster will be on the other side of the lake, Andy. And you're just like, meh, 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 meh. And then it'll just be plowing. And all of a sudden, you'll hit that wake. Mm. And you won't notice it because it comes like a minute later because it just hits you. And it could fuck you over. Go on YouTube and look at some of the crashes, dude, that happened. Guys are showing off and they hit weird waves and they go bam and they all knock each other out. You gotta look those up. It's pretty funny.
You gotta be careful because there's like these rock quarries, right?
Yeah, dude.
And if you get too close to them, I mean, you can sink. So, I mean, you know, like the spots that he took us to swim and whatever were like right basically in the middle of the lake, man. It was the most refreshing, most exhilarating thing you're ever going to experience because it's so cold.
Yeah, dude.
You're in the middle of this massive lake. And for those who don't know, we're on Lake Tahoe. Here in like Truckee, California. Truckee's the city, like cool ass town, by the way. Everybody's so nice here. Everybody's cool. Everybody's laid back. How expensive is it? Everybody's happy. It's very expensive, but it's California. You know, I mean, it's California, vacation destination. You know, so they get you. There's no way to get around that, Cam. No, you just got to deal with it. You know,
you pay. Don't be cheap. I told you that. Don't be fucking. Don't go the fuck out there and be cheap. Because then what the fuck's the point of it? Spend the money. You know what the fuck you're spending. It's all good. I was just curious. California's expensive, man. It is what it is.
Yeah, California's expensive. So real quick, though. So we had a captain, and he's so laid back, man. He let us do whatever we wanted to do on the boat. He didn't care.
Yeah.
And
of course he didn't. Yeah.
No, he doesn't care. And these guys, you know, I mean, that's just like what they do. If they want to come to work and drive a boat that day, they can. Yep. If they don't want to show up and do it that day, they don't have to. I mean, it's like the great life. Everybody's just like so laid back and just
lake life, homie.
It's lake life.
Lake life, homie. Is there big old fucking badass houses on that? Or can you not build on that lake? Is it all a national park? So you can't build houses on that? How does that work?
No, you can build. No, it's not a national park here on the lake. You can build houses. I mean, there's some like crazy houses, like the guy Harrah's, you know, the founder of Harrah's Casino.
Yeah.
Like he's got like a crazy house on the lake. I mean, there's a bunch of people.
No, but they can't have their docks though, right? There's got to
be. No, they can have their docks.
Really?
Yeah.
They can have their docks. Is it a busy lake? Is there people partying? Like, are there monster boats going 100 miles an hour, like the Lake of the Ozarks? Like,
oh, what? I mean, no, it's not. It's I don't know if it's like the Lake of the Ozarks or not. I've never been to the Ozarks. I told you. I mean, I certainly hope. If the Ozarks is like this, Cam, I don't need to go to California. No. I'll just go to the Ozarks. But it's probably a little bit different. This is the second deepest lake in the world. I mean, it goes down to like over 1,600 feet in certain parts of the lake. Yeah, I mean, 1,625, I think, is the deepest spot. It's just an enormous lake, man. It stretches over two states. It goes into Nevada. This week, they've got that big celebrity golf tournament going on there at the Edgewood Golf Course where the Winter Classic was.
Oh, nice.
Remember, we had Dan Quinn on, who had won the the event three different times. So people are coming in for that, man. But honestly, for a 4th of July weekend, I mean, there's areas you just don't go to that are going to be super crowded and super packed. But we've been fortunate. You stay away from the people, Cam.
Well, fuck, my little puppies won an award yesterday. We had a little parade out here in the wealthy part of Franklin County. And I just put balloons on the fucking dogs. And they won an award. And we got a gift certificate, Andy. So we're pretty pumped about that.
Okay, I saw your acceptance speech. First off, take the balloons off the dog. That's animal abuse.
It's
so embarrassing that you walk your dog with balloons tied on your dog. You can't do that, Cam, and have any street cred whatsoever.
No, people loved it. They asked me if they could pet the dogs. And I go, yeah, you could pet the dogs. They are the most popular things in the neighborhood. They get all the attention. They're going to be on the front page of the St. Albans News. They're big pimping it out here right now. And all you had to do is put fucking balloons on them.
Dude, you got a $5 gift card. That's probably the most embarrassing reward I've ever seen in my life.
The most embarrassing thing ever. Possible.
$5? No, that's what they gave you? What, are you going to get a couple sticks of gum? Like, what do you do with that?
No, because I go down to the head store and get, like, candy in the middle of the night. Or, like, right before, I'm like, I'm craving candy. So I'll go get fucking Starburst. I'm probably $8 a piece, though. So I'll get a half of Starburst.
Dude, you got to work on your acceptance speech. You're like, I want to know what the fuck Kate.
I
was doing.
They just said, where's Cam? Bring him up here. I'm like, oh, hi. Oh, yay. This, that. God bless America. But I love the 4th of July. I love posting different things. I got American flags everywhere, Andy. We celebrate that out here. We walked up to the fireworks last night. I was completely wasted. I think we did like a little thing on, and I looked at it today. I'm like, oh God, why did I post that? But it's all good. It's all good. But Kate and I had an awesome time, man. And she's off today. We're chilling, dude. We're chilling. You know what? You know what we're not doing? We're not really getting excited about what the fuck's going to happen tonight because it's probably going to be a shit kicking. And Canada's like, no, you can't bring the wives and family up to celebrate. And I'm like,
I know. Jesus Christ. And some of the wives are letting it be known they're not happy about that, Cam.
I bet they're fucking not happy about
families
that,
aren't happy. This is like once in a lifetime. Deal. They had it taken away from them last year. Now they make it back. How about the mayor of Tampa Bay? Did you see that? She comes out and says she hopes they lose so they can win on home ice.
She's getting bashed for that. Don't be dumb. That's a dumb thing to say. You don't say – you've never played sports in your life. You could tell. She's probably politics her whole fucking life. She has no clue. You don't say that. Jesus Christ. You've been open all goddamn – you've been open for the past 6-8 months. You know what? You need the money that bad? You don't do that, though.
It's financial, you think?
Well, she's just – I think she's just an idiot. And she's just like, well, was she serious on that? Was she kind of a joke? But you never want to say that about your team. Like, you're the mayor. Like, you represent your teams, too. Imagine somebody said, we don't want them to – wait, what? Don't jinx them, you idiot. God. Right.
No, I mean, I couldn't believe she said that. Couldn't believe she said that.
I know. But you know, this series has been so goddamn boring. I'm sorry. It just every – remember when we were pumping up hockey so much, Andy? Like, fuck, great product, da-da-da-da-da. Everybody's kicking the shit. They don't – Montreal's just like, well, they're not even hitting. It's like they're trying to go skill to skill with them. It just – they got no fucking chance, dude. I mean, I'm sorry. Anything could happen. I could put my fucking foot in my mouth. I don't even care. It's boring.
No, listen, you're just waiting for them to score. No, they have like they can't score.
You can't do anything.
They can't score. You're waiting for them. You know, like you can go back to the Vegas series because they were so opportunistic. They get chances, whatever, and they would capitalize. Right. They had big giveaway, the big gaffe from Marc-Andre Fleury, whatever. Yep. They got some chances. Listen, and they found their way to the Stanley Cup final. Nobody expected them to be here. I'll give it to Montreal. I mean, they kind of celebrated like they won the Stanley Cup after they won the conference final or the third round to get to the final. They did.
The people did. But
even Bergevin was getting like, I mean, going crazy.
And
I mean,
you're right on that.
He was, man. Right. And I mean, he's going crazy. Right. They're like, they're hugging down by the bench. I mean, everything. But we saw that here in St. Louis a few years ago, man, when there's that much emotion that goes into it. Yep. I remember when the Blues beat San Jose to reach the final. I mean, you would have thought they won the Stanley Cup final that night too. And Jordan Binnington's dad, he was in the lounge right outside our studio, and it was all mayhem. We're going live. You know, we go live for like an hour and a half, whatever, interviewing everybody known to man down there. You had Layla. You had John Hamm. You had all these people floating around. And, I mean, alumni are crying, you know? I mean,
the late We did that when Patty scored, Andy.
Yes, the late Bobby Plager, man. I mean, we love Bobby. I mean, he had tears in his eyes. Oh, Kelly Chase crying, like, you know, Brett Hall celebrating like no other. But I'll never forget Jordan Binnington's dad.
He didn't give a shit, but go ahead.
Jordan Binnington's dad looking at me, and he said, why is everybody celebrating like this? Like super calm. He's just like Jordan. He's like, I don't understand what this is crazy. This is ludicrous. He goes, why are people doing this? And I was like, look, John, this city, this franchise, they haven't been to the finals since like the late 60s. This is like a big deal. You're kind of seeing what this means to the alumni, to the current team, whatever.
The city's coming together. The city's hardcore. Yeah. Like the
but I'll never forget him. I'll never forget him saying, hey, listen, you got to win four more. Then you can celebrate, you know? And so, you know, sometimes your emotions get the best of you. Premature celebration. Yeah. I don't know if we've seen that from Montreal or not. I just don't think they're good enough. I don't know how they beat Vegas.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're getting shit stomped. And it's not fun to watch. It's frustrating to watch. And I want Patty to win three in a row. Like, fuck yeah. Like, I like Tampa. They're cool as shit. But, like, you want a series out of this, dude. Like, you want something. It's not good for the game. It looks like shit. And I don't know. Fuck. And not to mention still, like, the lack of fans there. I don't know. It just everything's kind of like, this is so goofy. And I know I'm being very simplistic when I say this. But, we watch everything. And it's like, well, I'm watching a game. And I'm like, just I want to do everything else but watch it. And that's just not a good sign. I want to do everything else but watch that game.
At least the games come on early out here. They come on at like 5 o'clock.
How nice, dude. Or even 7 o'clock is great here, too. If fucking 8 o'clock, I'm like, ugh.
No, I know. Fuck. I know. But Montreal, man, I mean, just score. You know, Josh Anderson, no goals.
Stop chirping Patty.
No goals. Oh, I know. I don't know. That's a good chirp fest, though, man. There's a lot of respect there. Between those two guys, former London Knights, man. I mean, Josh Anderson's a great player. Really is. He's got to come through, though. Toffoli, no goals in this series. Like, where are these guys, dude?
I know. And they dominated. But it's just like, you know, when you're not doing it, you just don't chirp. Just fucking go do it. You chirp. Your rebuttal on a chirp would be go hit somebody or make a play and fucking do something. Get on the bench. Don't tell him to get on the fucking bench. He's got as many points as you. Don't just shut the fuck up. And fucking play. Like at that point, you just focus on your chirp is what you do on the ice because they got so much leverage over you in that department.
Yeah. All right. So Cam, a little bear update here in Truckee, California. You want to know what's going down with the Bears?
What's up?
Listen up here. So
you people are them so again?
No, they're so casual, like nonchalant. Nobody's scared of the Bears. They're like, no, man. They're like domesticated around here. Like if they come down. I mean, just don't get in between the mama bear and the cubs. But they come down. They don't even pay attention to you. They want nothing to do with the humans.
They want food. They want them hillbillies that leave the garbage out.
Did you see that video of those bears that came down to the beach here at Tahoe? And people are just like chilling. Don't even get up to like scurry away from the bear. They're just like hanging out. And the bear was there with little cubs.
Oh.
And they're just swimming around, splashing in the water. And everyone's just got their phones out like it's no big deal. That's how they act about bears around here. Nobody's because scared of them.
They're domestic at this point. And even if you – it's like maybe people down in Florida, hillbilly fucking Amazon, and they – with the crocodiles down there. They're just like, well, there's one. Doop, on the golf course, like, dun, dun, dun. Like, this dinosaur, this fucking dinosaur that hasn't had to, like, change its ways in over, like, millions of years because it's just an ultimate predator. They look the same, maybe a little smaller, for millions and millions of years. And this thing could kill anything. And then it's like, oh, there it is. Like, it's crazy. You just get used to it. Those things are probably the same way. Like, I'll go eat a dog over here. There's fish I could eat here. I don't know, man. I we live in Missouri, dude. We deal with snakes and spiders here. Everything else, like, if maybe a mountain lion somewhere, like, there's not much going on.
Cam, how do you deal with gondolas? Are you scared to go up the mountain in a gondola?
I haven't done it in a while, Andy. I couldn't ski or anything because of hockey, but I did when I was a kid. My vertigo now, I say vertigo, sorry, guys. I fucking suck on planes. Like, it's getting bad, Andy. Sometimes I'm driving, I'm like, over. Like, if I was driving up there, I'd feel like I'm falling. It's not good. And people have been messaging me about that, too. They have the same thing. So it is bad. So if I'm on a goddamn gondola, although I think it's different. On a plane, you just, I don't know where my mind is. But, like, on a roller coaster, you're supposed to have that feeling. So maybe I feel differently. Or even a gondola, you're kind of like, I don't know, Andy. I'd have to get my fucking mind right and just chill and jam out the music and just look at the view. But it would fuck me up.
Oh, I thought about you because it stops.
Oh,
it, like, stops three different times, and you're just like hanging there, and, like, you know, the kids, like, get up and walk around and start swinging around a little bit. So I didn't know how you'd handle that.
Oh, I'd be like, kids, sit down now. Sit down, sit, Andy, get control of them. Oh my God.
Hey,
no, I can't do it.
Cam, you got to look up the peak to peak gondola. So A couple summers when my wife and I were up in Whistler, they had this gondola that stretches from one mountain peak to another. And you basically go over like nothing. It looks like the Grand Canyon below you, like thousands of feet.
Oh,
and man, we were just hanging there. It stopped in the middle. And there are these big gondola cars. And there was a family that was in there from like another country. They weren't speaking English. And while we're sitting there, dude, just not moving, they start getting up and walking around and taking pictures. They're shaking this thing.
Oh, put your foot down.
And I'm like, my wife is like laughing. Like, I'm like, no. You got to sit down. You guys got to sit down.
Oh, God.
Just hang, look it up. Look up the peak to peak.
Yeah, gondola. Not to mention the wind. The wind's hitting it too. And you're like, oh my God. No, I get paralyzed. I get paralyzed. So if I'm that bad, like on a plane, am I paralyzed? Like, I can't move. It paralyzed me. And I just want to lay down. It all started, I told you, four or five years ago when Kate and I went to with my buddy, Mikey, on that yacht trip. And we stayed up all night the last night and we partied so hard. And I flew back on a private jet, which is the nicest fucking badass. We have couches on the thing. And I felt like I was falling through that. I was going to have a seizure. And I'm like, and I'm looking, oh, the windows are way, way bigger in there. And I felt like I was falling through and I was going to have a seizure. And everybody's just laying there like sleeping. And I'm sweating. My poor wife is just like, are you okay? I'm like, Kate, I'm not good. And it was a 5-hour flight. Andy, it was the most torturous. It was like I had so much fun to where God's like, no, motherfucker, I'm going to torture you for 5 hours. Rethink yourself. And since then, I still kind of have that when I'm driving. Man, Andy.
No, I know. I get it too.
Yeah, but I partied really hard that night.
Listen, even when CJ was driving, CJ had the boat going 55, and all of a sudden, like, we're like on the edge of the boat because he's turning it so fast to the right. And
yeah, I don't know if I like that.
We're doing these jumps. Like, I'm like, what are you doing, CJ?
Jumps.
Like, CJ. Oh, yeah. Like,
you know, that thing's got one. It's only got 140. That thing ain't even getting on plane that quick.
We're
it's
hitting big waves. We're hitting waves and literally coming off the water.
Yeah. No, I know. But that thing's not meant. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck he's doing on that, Andy, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
you could be exaggerating because you don't know boating yet. I mean, I'll take you to the fucking hillbillyville of Lake of the Ozarks, and I'll show you the multi-million-dollar fucking houses down there. It is all the wealthy people in the Midwest. They migrate to the Lake of the Ozarks. My Caruso's listening right now. He knows exactly what the fuck I'm talking about. And they buy all these badass boats. They're all construction workers, this, that, and the other. And they go down there and have fucking million-dollar houses and have million-dollar boats. That's 120 miles an hour.
That's a fake lake. That's a fake lake.
One of the biggest lakes in – what are you talking about? It's got more of shoreline than California.
Man-made.
It's a man-made lake in the 30s, dude. They dammed it up, the Bengal Dam. They dammed it up, and now they made tons of money down there.
I don't want to go to some Hoosier-ass fake lake.
It is. It's fun, though. If you were the right people, look, Andy, Why do you think girls, why do you see all these girls on boats when there's an old fuck driving it? Boats are the most attractive goddamn thing because they're not driving a boat. You got to have a guy that has extra coin to have a toy that's that expensive. So they're just a sex appeal. So it attracts girls down there. And girls attract everything else. So if you got a badass boat and you know how to drive it, it's a fucking badass thing, dude. You might get one. If you're single, you probably wheel something.
I might get one of these Chris Crafts. CJ loved us, by the way.
100 grand?
He said he has some terrible, like, you know, you never know who you, who, he never know, who, you know, knows who he's going to get. He could get like a bachelorette party where they're just going crazy.
Yes.
But he said you get a bachelor party where guys just get like belligerent, crazy, start yelling at him or whatever. He loved us. He said we were the chillest group he's ever had.
Oh, I bet. I mean, Jesus, Andy, what do you, you know, you and your family are like, you guys are probably sitting there like, hi, I'm not, sweet. Like, fuck yeah. He's probably dealing with fucking, yeah, but they're, imagine being that at some of these other Hoosier ass lakes, man, where some of these people are just fucked up. You know, you can always tell you're a hillbilly whenever you go down the lake and you're wearing jeans, you know, and you're at a bar and you're in jeans and you're like, that dude doesn't get it. He's coming from somewhere else.
He kept us out there an extra hour, though, man. That's cool. Hooked us up.
Yeah, but you guys are just easy to deal with, man. Oh, no. Oh, no, Andy. Today I saw – I don't know this kid. I don't know where he is on a depth chart. Like, not that
Columbus,
it
matters.
Oh, God. What's his name? Cape. I was talking to Cape with that earlier, and I'm like, oh, God. Yeah. She's horrible.
No, it's Matisse. I don't have the last name in front of me, but it's Kivalenx or something along those – you know, it's a –
What happened?
Slovenia. He played in the World Championships with Slovenia. He actually won I played in a couple games for the Blue Jackets. Obvious, tragic news.
24 years old.
And, and I was watching an interview that he did after his first win of his career. I think it was against the Rangers. He made like 39 saves, won like a 2-1 game against the Rangers. And I'm watching this interview today, and they asked him, they said, hey, what are you going to do with the puck? And he said, I don't know. I'll probably give it to my parents, man. So it made me think about his family, what his parents are going through right now. He was training over here in the States during this offseason, obviously hoping to get an opportunity to become a regular NHL goaltender, man. So our thoughts are with him, his family, everybody there with the Columbus organization, Jarmo, JD,
Jarmo,
all the people over there.
Jarmo, they're all – we had a – They had just a bunch of the ex-alumni, everybody, alumni and current players just reaching out. And it's just like God, this happened. It was made me cry the other day, the last goddamn podcast with Pasta's kid. Like, oh, my God. Sorry, dudes, man. You know how it is. This shit happens sometimes, guys. I mean, it is what it is.
We're thinking about Manny Legacy, too, who's the goaltending coach there, you know.
Yeah,
so he obviously Manny worked a lot with this kid. So
play with him.
And getting back to real quick, Pasta, man, we're still thinking about Pasta.
Damn, you know,
when you brought that up in the previous podcast, like I had not seen that news, you know, so I didn't really like you kind of broke the news to me as we were talking here
in my head. I couldn't not think about that right off the bat.
Yeah. I got to ask one thing, though. So now the news is kind of out, though, about the Blues shopping Tarasenko.
Yeah.
And everyone's talking about that and whatever. And listen, I think I even said this on the podcast. I think they're open. When I say they're open up for business, like they've let the rest of the league know that they're open for business, meaning basically like everybody's on the table. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think they're going to be hesitant in a way. I don't think they want to move Tarasenko if it's going to come back to bite them. Like if he's going to get hot and all of a sudden become who he was a few years back on a team that, you know, obviously the Blues are competing with, but if they can make a quality hockey trade, truly make themselves better, get real pieces in return. I mean, not just a couple draft picks, some futures. I don't think this is just about unloading the player, unloading the salary. I think Doug Armstrong's looking to make some significant hockey trades to improve this hockey team and compete with the other monsters in the conference, Vegas, Colorado, whatever. So I think those are the deals that's on the table. This isn't a situation where they're just looking to unload and kind of kick a player to the curb, if you know
what
I mean.
He's got no trade clause, honey, as far as –
No, he's got no trade,
So what did he says – he'd tell the organization what teams that he would want to go to?
They always submit a list. And so, listen, he just fired his agent. He's got a new agent now. And I get the sense that Tarasenko would maybe have some interest in having a change of scenery, but – he's going to be able to dictate that a little bit in terms of where he goes, who he plays with, and who he plays for. So, and he should. He's a star player, man. He should have some input. If he does get traded, I mean, he's made this organization some money too. He sold a lot of tickets. He was a big time fan favorite for a long time.
Look at the
Had some big moments here, you know, big part of a Stanley Cup winning team. Right. So, you know, that's just the way it goes. Players should have the right to be able to dictate a little bit in terms of where they go.
He made one of the biggest plays in game 7. Remember, Andy, it was like 2-0. And you're stolen, and Boston was all over St. Louis, and then fucking Vladdy goes into the corner, beats the guy, takes the hit, spins around, and makes that 1-T pass to Schinner, 3-0. Mm-hmm. Sit down, all y'all, sit down. It's over. Yeah. It's over. And yeah, he scored 40 goals. Andy, we watch every single game, man, and you're like, oh, Vladdy, he's not there. And then all of a sudden, you have a glimpse where he'll like take it to the net, like blah 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 blah, and you're like, fucking A, Vladdy's back. But then recently, like he's shooting a puck, he's like duffing it. I don't know. I know he listens here, and we love Vladdy so much, man. He's a cool family. He's a sweetheart of a human being. But it's just hockey, man. It's a business, and he's gonna be fine, dude. He'll play a long time, made a ton of money.
Well, so I think that's the
Instagram's
question.
Great. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, his last game, he looked like he scored a couple of Tarasenko goals, right? Yeah, he had the breakaway goal. He was able to snap it. You know, from the left circle, like kind of like a, you know, traditional Tarasenko goal like you see. But that's the big question, man. Can he get back to the level that he was at after having all the surgeries and missing as much time as he has? So
I don't know.
We'll follow that pretty closely.
A little blues note, man. We got to satisfy some of the St. Louis fans.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I love it when somebody sent me a message. You know, I'm putting these pictures up. First of all, I want to get your take on my Instagram stories. What you're thinking? Because you sent me this message, like this panic message telling me like how much better my wife is at Instagram than I am. I'm not doing it right.
Well, you're not smiling. Oh, the gondola. I'm looking at the gondola right now. There is a smile. Like, yeah, fucking smile, dude. I mean, like, you know, it's some of them are blurry. And it's just like you don't take a blurry goddamn picture. Okay. And now I was wasted last night and I did a stupid video. And I might have to text Kate right now and just be like, go and delete that. Everything was cute. But once the fireworks hit, Kate and I was like, oh, and you know, sometimes you wake up the next day and you're like, oh, but I'm looking at blurry pictures right now, Andy, and I don't like it.
Which ones?
At the campfire scene and shit. I don't know. I don't think the listeners really care that much about your Instagram.
Is it my Instagram that you're looking
at? Well, it doesn't matter. Whatever she posts is you, whatever you post is her. So you guys are in sync when it comes to that.
Is that how it works?
Well, as far as optics are concerned, yes, because she's taking pictures of you. So, like, if you're looking at it, like, that's the same account.
Mm. Well, I didn't see what she put up there. But you sent me, like, a pump-up message yesterday saying, like, I'm doing it right. Oh, yeah, you're doing a good job with that.
I mean, you did do a video where you're, like, you're taking a picture. You're filming driving, and you're just looking at woods. And I'm like, don't waste my time. I'd rather watch my sprinklers go off or something.
You didn't listen to the music that was attached to it.
Yeah, but your music is stupid. It's probably Fish or something playing something. And I'm like,
we had a little Peter Tosh, a little reggae music, but you could see the water through the woods, Cam. That's what's the most amazing about this spot is you have the best of everything. You've got the beach. You've got the turquoise clear water, which is amazing.
You can drink
And then you've got the Sierra Nevada mountains right there.
I know.
Like, it's crazy. Beautiful.
It's a gorgeous part of the world. Yeah. It really is.
We got lots to do. This is our last day on vacation, so a big day planned here. We'll figure out what we're going to do here on our final day. But DJ Smith is on this edition of the Cam and Strick podcast. Cool-ass dude, former Windsor. Like, Cam thought he was talking to, like, his buddy in Windsor. Like, he took himself – I'm like, dude, this guy's a head coach in the NHL.
I know. You know, like, I get like that. I know. Well, no, let me explain it. Because it's – I don't know. I've met him before. I was after him in Windsor. I just look at him like a buddy, although I don't even know him that well. Rather, because I don't know. He's just down to earth and cool. So you kind of get that, like, I'm a buddy, and you just forget that he's a fucking coach. And, you know, like, you're not talking to me, you're doing a podcast. I don't know. I just forget sometimes. I'm not trying to be an ass by any
You forget he's a young coach, too, still trying to find his way.
Yeah, you're right.
But he's got a good reputation, man. His players really like him. People who, you know, are familiar with his career, his path to get to the NHL, like, really impressive. Yeah, he coached under Mike Babcock. Like, we asked him about Babcock. He didn't give Babs, like, any glowing remarks. I mean, talk about how organized he was and the fact that he would get up early and he was prepared.
Yeah, who doesn't? Who
all of that
prepared?
Stuff. Yeah, but he wasn't like, oh, I learned so much from him. I love working with Babs. So kind of get an idea of his thoughts there. But, you know, he's won some Memorial Cups, but his young players absolutely love this guy, man. He seems like, I told you, when I heard him talk, I was like, this is a guy you just kind of sound like you're just hanging out with at the bar, like eating wings with, basically.
Kind of like, there's a couple coaches like that. Like Rod Brendamore is kind of that way too, where he just talks to you. Like if I was a coach, excuse me, I would be the same way. I'd just be like, look, just do that. You're down to earth, you're up front, you know what you're getting. And then some other coaches have a different kind of plan, like where they're just kind of more like Pete DeBoer wouldn't talk to you much. And then once he did, it'd be like very stoic and this, that, and the other. And then, of course, you get Larry Robinson, who's like, hey, get in here. Like, it's just everybody has their thing. And for him being just like, I grinded it, man. I was tough. I quarterbacked the power play. I've kind of penalty killed. I've done everything. You know, I played in the NHL. I was a captain. I was a leader. I was this, that, and the other. I could talk to you. I know what you're going through. I get that. And so he could be very successful being that way, man. And that's why it's always good. So I know we talk about that, and you're like, kind of be like too loosey-goosey with some guys when you know that they're a coach. But, like, I got that feel with them. I just forgot.
You know what? We talk about players all the time, how teams, you better lock that guy up or he's going to leave. I mean, that's how I look at things with DJ Smith too, man. They better lock him up. They better not mess around with him because, you know what? They've got something in him in terms of a guy who's relatable to the young players, who's getting the most out of his young players.
Yep.
They get better and better. They better not mess around with that, like, because you're not going to get some of these guys like a Brady Tkachuk. They're not going to sign long-term with the Ottawa Senators without knowing that the head coach is locked up, who they like playing for. So you don't lock up this head coach. You may have a hard time locking up some of these star players too. I'm just throwing that out.
Hey, it helps. Hey, they have fun, man. If you talk to a guy and they say they have fun when they're losing their asses off and they're still having fun, not off the – no. Meaning like we busted our ass, we lost 4-3. But damn, we've gotten that – we as a team came – when you're having fun, that goes a long way. And when you're a coach and you hear some of your big boys say, it's fun. Mm-hmm. But you work hard. So there's a difference. Like, don't get misconstrued to like fun party because he lets you do it. No. We have fun on the ice. That's what Brady's talking about. And that in itself goes a long way if you're a coach, man.
And I watch these guys like John Cooper, who's the front runner to become the head coach for Team Canada, whatever. And knowing Coop for so long and watching him closely when he was a nobody. And then watching him now, he really hasn't changed that much as a person. You know, we had him on, whatever, keep in touch with him. Obviously, he's in a completely different world. You know, he knows different people. His status in society is way different. He makes way more money, surrounded by all these, you know, superstar NHL players. John Cooper's putting together a Hall of Fame resume. Honestly, he won another Stanley Cup now. You go to the Olympics, you get a gold medal. Who knows if he wins another cup? This guy's still young. This guy could go down as one of the greatest coaches of all time when it's all said and done.
Look, he looks like he's 28.
And he really hasn't changed that much. You know, Barry Trotz, you talk to people like him. These guys win. They don't change that much. It just gives them a little bit of credibility. The coaches who try to change and they get away from who they are or what made them successful, we always like put coaches in a separate category from players, Cam. You know, players got to do what they do that makes them successful, that got them to the National Hockey League. Coaches can't change either, man. Obviously, you get more experience. You have more command. You know, you have more, you know, reign within your organization when you have success and you win. But, you know, some coaches, man, you see them get a taste of success and then all of a sudden they change and boom.
You adapt. Now, you don't change.
And now they find themselves back at the bottom and they have a hard time getting back up there.
Well, it's different, man, because the kids change. So you got to change a little bit, but you adapt to what's – to what these kids are all about. Like every year, it's just new kids that are different, right? And even as a player like Timo Solani or Stevie Eisman, like sometimes you just got to – you don't change who you are, but now I got to be a third-line role and do this and do that. But as far as like treating the players and stuff and how you react to different things, like all of a sudden like you're talking to everybody and all of a sudden you're like, no, I'm done talking to everybody. I'm going to be like Pete would do, like Pete DeBoer, where I'm just more of that stoic character. I'm going to chill. Like, if John Cooper did that, then it'd be like, now you fucking change. But you're changing, like, the way – I don't know. It's hard to explain, but you're right on that, man. You're right. You got to always treat the guys the same way because they trust you that way.
Well, here's where – because you do change because you know you're having a ton of success. You're making a bunch of money. It's human nature. You're going to – that confidence is going to come out, right?
Damn right.
You're going to have that
kind of Subaru anymore. You're driving a fucking badass car.
No. Painter.
Hey, Davis Payne, Subaru. I love you, Painter. Okay, I get that. But Walt chirped you so – I know he probably listens to it. Walt chirped you so bad. So Davis Payne, remember he took over Andy and he'd pull up with that suit. He had that Subaru and he wasn't making that much money. He's grinding it, man. So it's like we all did that. And yeah. Walt would fucking beak him. And all of a sudden he got a car deal and drove that Tahoe from Johnny Noundalf, I think.
Should have been Andy Murray. He took over for Andy Murray, just to make that clear. But, you know, so anyway.
Oh, what'd I say?
Well, you said Andy. I just want to make sure, like, people knew which Andy you're talking
about.
Andy
Murray.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so we'll see how this plays out. Again, it's game four tonight. I hope they can extend it. Maybe the mayor's onto something. But I wouldn't mind to see Tampa Bay win on home ice, but at the same time, I wouldn't mind to see Montreal extend this thing. Let's get to, like, six games.
Oh, win hell, a game. No shit. It's just – I don't want to talk about baseball or everything baseball now for the next fucking 3-4 months. Baseball. Like, well, whatever. Well, being in St. Louis, like we do radio here, Andy. It's like, ugh, no more hockey. I could kill 40 minutes talking hockey. You know, you get the game.
Yeah, but it's a short offseason, man. We're going to get right into the –
very true.
We're going to get right into the expansion draft. Then you're going to get right into, you know, the NHL draft. You got free agency. And then all of a sudden, you know, training camps are going to open up.
Andy, it's a grind.
Hey,
there's a couple days you could talk about shit, but go ahead.
I'll throw this out there, too.
What?
Because a lot of people – are like, you know, wondering about like expansion drafts and whatever and thinking, okay, we got to trade this guy before the expansion draft because Seattle may take that player and then you're going to get nothing in return. But the way teams look at it is like, well, if you trade that player, what? You get like a draft pick and then they take another player. Now you lose two players, you know, off your roster. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's a unique situation.
How teams look at this. Like teams are super intelligent in terms of how they look at
right.
The expansion draft, like it'll blow fans' minds away if you really had discussions with people on the inside in terms of how they, you know, try to determine and try to guess who a team might take and who they leave protected and who they don't protect at all. It's like there's a strategy and way more strategy involved than people realize.
Well, I'm excited about the Seattle team, dude. They got badass jerseys. Seattle's a cool city for the most part. They have a great owner. They are – I hope they're great. I hope they're like Vegas in a way. I think everybody's going to look at what Vegas is doing as a whole. And, of course, they've been successful because they put together a great team and they're signing guys and spending money. But the way they just – and Vegas is Vegas, but, like, I think Seattle's going to look at Vegas the way they just, like, promote their players and, like, they're just fun. They're sexy. Yeah. They're cool. Like, fuck, this new rink's going to be badass in Seattle. Like, people are going to want to take trips there. There's always going to be a Seattle-Vegas trip or something where you hit. Like, it's just really cool. I'm really excited about this new team. I hope they're really good.
Cam,
I really do.
They won't be Vegas. I really believe Seattle is going to be more like an expansion team. I think they're going to lose a lot early on.
Really?
I'm not crazy about the head coach that they selected to be their first head coach. I mean, David Haxtell.
I don't know, man.
I mean, his players didn't love him in Philly. I know, like, that was his first opportunity coming from college hockey. Maybe he'll be better with a second chance. I'm just not feeling it. I don't have that much confidence, like, based on the coaches who were available. And you're taking a little bit of a risk, man. So the Seattle's taking a risk, whether they want to admit it or not. It's a risky hire as their head coach. So he's not a guy to me, I mean, who was just with Toronto as an assistant coach. They've got their own issues going on there in Toronto with a ton of talent. Not to put that on Haxtell by any means, but I don't get the warm and fuzzies about this hire, man. I'm not super confident that he's going to be a guy that can do certainly what Vegas did in their first year, man. I don't see that happening.
We just don't know. I don't know enough about the dude. They had some other big dogs they could have hired. It could have been like more like a pizzazz move, but I don't know, man. They're doing their due diligence. I can't comment on it. I don't know. I have no idea. He could go in there and kick ass, dude.
I don't know.
You know more about him than I do, to be honest with you. But when I saw him, like, oh, okay. But again, we're not in the meetings. We don't know what they have. They have a game plan, dude. They're not just like, well, let's get this guy. Like, they know what they're doing. I hope the hell they know what they're doing.
No, I know.
Hey, it's a badass organization, man.
They did their interview process. I don't know. Yeah, some other great candidates available.
Great candidates.
That's all I'm saying. You're right, man.
Andy, I know.
So you chose that guy where you had probably some better candidates available. Now, they have the reasoning, like you said. So, I mean, again, Ron Francis, I'm not going to sit here and second guess his decision to hire him. But all I'm saying is when you consider who else is available, it's a risky hire. When you consider his track record as a head coach, it's a risky hire. And we'll see how it plays out. And if it doesn't work, I mean, I won't be surprised.
Yeah, whatever. I just want them to I want them to win games. I want people to want to go there. I want them to have a cool atmosphere. I want that rink to be badass, like a cool part of town, like everything. Like, you just want it to grow and be fun and make those West Coast trips.
No, I'm with you. Seattle's a great town, man. It's good. Listen, you do that swing, Seattle, Vancouver, Vegas, whatever. Like, you
Vegas can, shit, yeah.
You can have a lot of fun with that.
San Jose, anyway. Maybe. Napa, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. Arizona made another hire too, real quick before we move on, because they hired a guy from junior hockey again. And I mean, some of these, but again, Arizona doesn't matter who they hire. They could bring in John Tortorella. Like, it's not going to create.
I don't even care, Andy. Monster splash there. Don't even care.
You don't care about Arizona at all.
I don't know. Boring. This is going to kill me, but whatever. Like, he knows. Who's he kidding?
I'm with you. All right, dude. I got to go get on the mountain bike.
Yeah, man. Let's go, dude. I'm going to go. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do today. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go. We're gonna do. We're gonna go down a little lake, and I got. We're blowing up these rafts. So I'm gonna take the puppies, and like, I got this little motor scooter raft. Like, and then I got a little thing that attaches for the puppies to lay on.
Yeah.
So I could cruise around this little lake with this little motorized raft, Andy, with a cooler.
Hey, which dog won the competition, by the way? You can't be entering two dogs.
They both did.
No, they did not. One of them.
They both won. The cutest puppy award. They're like, fuck yeah. They fucking won. The cutest things. They walk down the street and everybody stops and look. They're like, oh, hi, look at that. Can I touch them? I'm like, fine, you can. Your hands are a little greasy. No. You, Sam, yes, you can come in here. What?
My kids are driving me crazy. Every dog they see, they got to run up. It's like this big ordeal. They got to go pet the dog. Like, one of these dogs are going to bite one of these days. Like, you got to ask. You can't
hopefully it's a rich guy.
Sue
him. Yeah, hopefully it's a really wealthy guy up in that, like, where are you at again? I forgot. Oh, Lake Tahoe. Hopefully he's a wealthy-ass guy, and he's got this. He's rescued a dog, kind of nips the hand, and you're like, well, I'll give him about $20,000 or $20
million. Like bucks. Sheldon Surrey or something?
Oh, my God. That actually would piss me off so bad what happened to Chaser in that whole situation. Bite your Chaser's just trying to make money up there, sell houses. Andy wearing his like crocodile boots, and he gets bit by Shelly's dog so bad.
Oh my God,
was it in the foot? Was it the foot? He had to lob around and sell property up there with an infected bite mark.
And it was ugly, it was nasty.
Oh, Chaser's gonna kill it on the spot. Like, this is. How can you not, Andy?
I don't think you can kill this dog. I what was the dog's name? I forgot the dog's name.
Girthy or something.
I got the dog in this fight. I got the dog.
Hercules. Like, poor Chaser's like, you bit my foot off. It's getting infected. I have to get rabies shots. And now I have to walk around Idaho and sell houses. Poor guy.
Well,
that's
listen,
a Hoosier move.
Happy 4th of July to all our listeners here in the States. Hope you had a great 4th of July holiday. By the way, no fireworks here on Lake Tahoe, man, because the forest, it's so dry.
Oh, dangerous. No. Imagine being that guy. You throw a dart out. You fucking smoking a dart. You fucking flicking the goddamn. Because that's sometimes you're driving fucking. And now millions of acres just ruined.
Dude, if you mention fireworks, they look at you like you're the devil. Yep. They want to kill you. Don't be coming here lighting fireworks.
You're not just killing the scene, dude. You're killing animals and fucking. Now they're getting killed on roads because they're just getting all pushed inside. Oh, fuck.
I know. In years past, they do it on the lake, but they didn't because of COVID and all that. I guess they didn't plan it.
Yeah, but, on the lake is fine. So,
yeah. Anyway, let's get to DJ Smith. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying, there's always. It's always usually in China or somewhere where the firework ceremony explodes too early and it all goes off together and people like get hit by fireworks. You ever see those?
Hey, what do you think of that world-class sprinter who's a badass? He's got the red hair, hair's on fire.
Fucking weed. Oh, it's weed. Like, get out of here. like you got so much weird things going on as far as like sports are concerned. But so weed is so petty. It's so petty. It's not helping her. Her brother died or something. Somebody died.
Her mom
fucking died. And she's like, I'm just, how I cope with it. I'm stressed out. Like, I get it, man. You get it, Andy. Who are you kidding? It's not a performance enhancing. But on the other hand, though, homeboy, she knew she couldn't have THC in her system.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a goddamn rule.
Right.
THC, and it stays there. I don't give a fuck if you have no fat on you. It's still in there for a couple weeks. And I'm telling you, man, I got fucking dinged a couple times where it's like your THC was over 11. Like, whoa. Like, it's there, and it stays in your system. And she fucked up. And it sucks because she's an awesome – she's actually a really cool chick. Like, this mm-hmm. – I don't know. That sucks, man. But, hey, that's the fucking rules. Get the rules out of there. Football, basketball. God, fuck.
They don't care.
Do what hockey do. Football, they care. What are you talking about? Football
– No, not anymore. They changed that. And basketball, they certainly don't care. I think they give it to you. It's basketball, there is – there's recreational – they don't test for recreation.
Okay. Well, hockey was the front runner of that.
They don't test for recreation. They do test, but they don't punish you for.
They don't punish you. You can get a little category, and only doctors can see it. Mm-hmm. Now, is that true? I don't know. Like, did Lou know what was? I'm sure he probably did somehow. I would think. Like, you want to know what you're fucking? What's in your player system that you're investing money into? I would want to know everything, Andy. Like, don't get me wrong, but. In hockey, like they get it. There's so many Canadians, like you can't. It helps. You know what? Guys are probably taking an edible or smoking a little, and they don't take that goddamn painkiller.
Mm.
That fucking nasty. Speaking of devil, those little fucks, those little fucking white pills are the devil. Maybe these guys just smoke a little bit. Man, there's so many guys that do, and they could skate forever. They're not lazy. If your kids are smoking at a young age and they're sitting in their goddamn basement, then you got to put your fucking foot down. But if they're in there working out and they smoke to go work out and that's their jam, then good God. I don't know.
I feel bad for her, man, because she's only 21, so she could always play or compete 21. in the next games, I guess, whatever. But she would have been an absolute star. Like, how much money is she losing out on endorsement money and whatever, you know? So, and she's got a unique skill. Like, she's the fastest woman probably on the face of the earth right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You could certainly monetize that. But when you get dingling,
oh, yeah.
21, though, she's got, I don't know how that works as far as age is concerned, but
yeah.
I don't know, man.
Well, she's got a lot of people on her side, man. She's getting a lot of support.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. No doubt. So, and she should.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to DJ Smith on this edition of the Cam and Strick podcast. As always, go to camandstrick.com and get that new merchandise, by the way. We got all these different things for you to choose from, T-shirts, hoodies, hats, lots of different selection for you to look at, camandstrick.com, so check that out today. We partnered with our people over there with Wingman Sports up in Canada. I should point this out. I think I mentioned this last time, Cam, that the prices are in Canadian dollars.
Yeah.
So you got to translate shipping sucks. That.
Don't get me wrong. When
it shipping
comes
sucks to the States. Yeah. That is what it is, but the pricing is Canadian dollars, so it's actually cheaper for our U.S. audience. And those of you in Canada, you don't have to pay the monster shipping because it's being shipped to you from Canada. So support the podcast, support us, man. And again, we'd love to see some Instagram photos when you guys get your new shipment and you're wearing the swag. So we want to see that. So anyway, camandstrick.com. You can listen to all the previous episodes and stuff like that there too. So if you missed an episode, whatever, you can listen to it there. All right. As always, the Cam and Strick podcast is brought to you by CarShield and CarShield.com. 800-857-2481. 800-857-2481. You never know when something's going to go down, Cam. Your engine, your computer, we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars. That's why you got to customize your package however you want it. You want to do it long-term, fine. You want to do a short-term package, you can certainly do that as well. Customize it. Use the promo code CAM. You'll save 10%, which is so embarrassing.
Why?
CAM. Well, it is. And we'll talk about that later. That's embarrassing, but you know what? Go ahead and do it because it's going to save you money. So do it. 800-857-2481. CarShield and CarShield.com. Plus, you get to pick your mechanic, choose where you take it.
Yep.
And they hook you up with a rental car as well, Cam. So CarShield. You know,
well, imagine going up to fucking Lake Tahoe and you're like, meh, 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 meh. Your car's sputtering out. You're like, oh, God. like, oh, yay, three kids in the car. Shit's going down to start on work.
Oh, my God.
Lordy, babe. It's easy peasy with Car Shield, mm-hmm. though.
Yep. Peace of mind, baby. Just like you get when you have that Daredevil hockey base layer, right. Kevlar, cut-resistant fabric that you're wearing. Hey, these kids out there, man, I saw a video from Daredevil Hockey. They sent it to us, Cam. I'll pass it along to you. And I'm showing all these kids who are buying Daredevil. Cole Perfett as well. NHL up-and-coming, really talented player. There's a bunch of CHL players in junior who are all wearing the Daredevil Hockey. A bunch of young kids are as well. Make sure you're protected. If you're a hockey parent out there, give yourself the peace of mind knowing that your kid, your son or your daughter, isn't going to have to land in the emergency room with a skate laceration. I mean, who wants that? You can't have that. It's the number one cause of emergency visits when it comes to youth hockey. So, again, Daredevil Hockey, check that out. Mention the promo code Cam and Strick, and you'll save a boatload of money. That's all caps, by the way. You mention the promo code when you check that in, Cam and Strick. So, again, check out Daredevil Hockey. Get that Kevlar-resistant fabric and just go play the game in style. And with a little bit of peace of mind. And you adult hockey players, you can wear that too. It's not just for the kids, Cam.
Yeah, you guys are falling over each other anyway. Who are you kidding? It's not just the fucking kids run into each other. Get skate lacerations every time you go out to alumni. Why stepping the Leos. On you? Fucking Leo comes out like, I know what I'm doing. Oh, fuck out of here. Fucking Leo.
Bellman and Bellman.com. No better place to get your vehicle for this summer, man. Still plenty of time. They got great deals. I know it's hard to get a car right now. It's not that hard at Bellman. I can tell you that right now. Dale and Dan and Company, they got the Cadillac, the Buick, the GMC on one side of the street in Troy, Missouri. Then you just hop across the street. You got the Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. So much selection. Best customer service. Great people. Great hockey fans. Hockey people have been supporting the game for a long time. And it's people so funny. Have been supporting Bellman for a long time too, Kim.
It's so funny. I was watching. I love watching like the men that built America, you know, and they're talking about like Henry Ford and fucking GM and Chrysler and how they just like, you know, like the stock, just crazy. Mm-hmm. Why I brought that up, I don't know, but it did tie into GMC Chrysler over at Bellman. Go check them out. No swinging dicks fucking working there. I'll tell you that. All right, now, no swinging dicks. Your wife can go buy a car and she gets treated like royalty, like Cleopatra. Oh, yeah. She'll fucking walk around like, it's awesome.
I think Dan Bellman, he made America.
He did. He is one of the founders. I just want to watch him on fucking Smithsonian right now.
He does everything. All right. Including bringing us this podcast with DJ Smith, the head coach of the Ottawa Senators, man. Up and comer.
Yep.
People internally in the hockey world, man, they really respect this guy. This guy has a lot of knowledge, knows what he's doing. He's getting the most out of a young team as well. And I'll be interested to see what the future looks like for DJ Smith as a head coach in the NHL over the course of the next 10, 15 years. How good of a coach can this guy be? He's got a lot of potential, man. Get to know the person behind the bench right here. DJ Smith on the Cam and Strick podcast.
Oh.
What up?
DJ.
What's going on, boys?
You fixed that tooth back in the day, man. He's synonymous for that tooth. He missed a tooth back in the day. Did you fix that damn thing or what?
Yeah, we got her fixed. You know what happened? I got to the NHL and they paid for it and away we went.
Hey, funny how that works, eh? Because Windsor wasn't going to do it. They're like, no, you're our leader and everything, but we're not going to fix that tooth for you.
Hey, oh, yeah. The American League either. If she was a battle, there was, pin it on the. You know, it might have happened somewhere else. But, yeah, when you get – I got to Colorado, and the boys took care of her.
Hey, you look good one way down, big boy.
We just hit record, and we just go, yeah, DJ. Dude. Hey, thanks for doing this, man. We appreciate it.
No problem.
I know you had to pick up your kids and everything. But, listen, I was the one who said at the beginning of the year that, the Ottawa Senators are my favorite team
They're
in the league.
Fun
And then I was like, okay, do I take it back? It was the beginning of the year. Do I take it back? And then you guys, like, turned it on. I'm like, see, what did I fucking told all you guys. This is my favorite team in the league. Like, and you guys start beating teams.
It was so much fun to watch,
DJ. How much fun do you have in coaching this group?
Well, you know what? That's my kind of team. They have fun. You know what? We don't take ourselves too serious. We practice hard, play hard. They like each other. You know, COVID was tough this year, but in saying that, it was a good year to have that many young guys because you're forced to hang out with each other all the time. You know, today's NHL, a lot of guys just go to the room, kind of disappear. You know, they did a good job, the NHL, of putting you know, rooms for the players where they could hang out and stuff. So for me, it was perfect for our group because, you know, they're forced to get to know each other, and there's a deeper bond there for sure that would take many more years if it wasn't that situation. So, you know, we started, you know, awfully, we weren't very good, you know, top to bottom. But the way we finished, I think we set ourselves up well going in the future.
Yeah, oh, big time, dude. You're entertaining, DJ. You're entertaining. We had just had Brady on, as you know. But, like, how do you balance that, though? Okay, so you're a new coach. You're young. They all know who you are. You know, you played. You did your shit. You're tough. And so how do you, like, balance that? Like, okay, now that COVID's in play, but I want the guys to hang out. But I don't want them to be too fucking crazy because, of course, you played in Windsor. You know what the hell we're talking about with this. So how do you balance that whole aspect? You know, like, it's tough.
Well, it is tough because you don't want to be the team or the guy whose team, you know, gets COVID and it spreads all over because you're telling your guys they can do things that maybe they're not supposed to be doing. Yeah. So, you know what? In the same part, though, I think part of the strength for me as a coach is I've always think like a player. You know, it doesn't mean that everything's a go all the time, but I think first, what would I want as a player and how would I treat this situation? And then I react accordingly. At the end of the day, you know how it is. Guys are going to do their thing.
Yeah.
They're going to, I mean, if they want to hang out, they want to have beers, they're going to do it anyways. So, you know what, as long as they're doing it and they're doing it at the right times, there's nothing wrong with it. As long as it doesn't affect your play, whatever it is, you know, that you guys are doing, I'm big on team. And the team that's the best team at the end usually wins.
Exactly.
You know what?
Don't embarrass me.
It's funny you say that. I've talked to Craig Berube about that a lot. And like Steve Ott, who's like an assistant. But both these guys, like they're players who are now coaching, you know. But you never lose that label as being a player. And in the eyes of your players, man, you're always going to carry that credibility. But where's the fine line? Like, how much can you interact with the guys, be around the guys, versus coaches go this way, players go that way?
Yeah.
Well, it is a fine line. Otter, I know real well, is from here. He, usually comes home. This year, he didn't come home, but usually plays golf for the
whole
summer.
He's fishing.
He's in fucking Florida.
Look
DJ.
At his Facebook page.
Who's
like,
he kidding?
He's fishing every day. I mean, that's all this guy. This guy's fishing.
I heard that. I did hear that. He is a beauty. He's as good a guy as there is. But there is a fine line because as an assistant coach like I was in Toronto, you could joke around and they had my trust completely. You could say whatever you wanted to, you know, and I had their back no matter what. As a head coach, even if I have their back, there's still some guys that don't want you around. You know, they don't feel comfortable. There's going to be half the guys that feel real comfortable with me and realize it is what it is. But, as a head coach, you've got to give your players freedom and room to do their own thing where the coach isn't always there. Even though I'm not judging them, you know, a lot less than maybe a lot of guys would, still they feel uptight. And for me, the NHL is so many games and so much pressure, and now with social media, how much can I take off their plate? And how much can I clear their mind mentally, make them better players? So, I can't be around too much, I guess, is what it comes down to.
No, the guys that are playing 20 minutes a night, they don't give a shit if you're around.
No, they don't. No, but if you're cool, like, there's a balance. It's weird, man. It's a weird – you're in a great spot, and the guys all look up to you, man. But it's a weird balance if there's an older guy, and you're like, okay, I got to talk to this motherfucker. Like, all right, I'm not going to do it in front of the guys. I don't want to call him out in front of the guys. So I'm going to bring you in. I'm going to tell you, like, get in here. I need to talk to you. Like, is that how it goes? Because some coaches will be like, no, I'm going to fucking call my 10-year, 12-year vet out in front of everybody to make a point. Or are you that guy's like, get your ass in here. I need to sit down. Shut the door. I need to talk to you. This needs to go down. Like, how do you approach that?
I think every situation's different. I mean, if the player respects you and has given you nothing but respect, and ultimately you're going to give him respect back. So whatever it is he's doing, it wouldn't be a situation where he'd ever embarrass him. But then there's also situations where they're your main guys, like Brady, like Connor Brown, Nick Paul.
Yeah.
These are some of the guys that have Zaitsev. These guys have been with me now for quite a bit. So every once in a while, I got to, go after them to let the rest of the group know that, it's, everyone gets the same treatment. But they also know with me that when that's done, and it's hard for players at first to realize this, the player and the person are two different people. Like, I could hate you as a hockey player. But when the game's over, I have nothing but respect for you as a person. It's not going to stop me. I'm not going to walk by you. I'm going to see you at breakfast. Hey, how you doing? Like, you can be the greatest person ever and a bad hockey player. So I could be mad at you during the game and vice versa. So I guess really going back to it, if it's a guy that's been around, like I had Braden Coburn this year, who I had nothing but the utmost respect for. Ron Hainsey, one of my favorites of all time. You know, I'd be more worried Ronnie would give it to me before I give it to Ronnie. But you know, I had him in Toronto. And, you know, if I had to talk to a guy like Ronnie, usually the real good older guys already know.
Yeah.
You know, they're already aware of the mistake they may have made or what's going on in the dressing room. And they're a step ahead of you, you know, and they already know. And they're coming to see you because a lot of guys got pride. And when their game starts to dip, they want it fixed. And I haven't had too much of an issue with, you know, with the older guys, especially if they work. Nicole's notes on me, if you work hard and you're a good team guy, you treat your teammates good, you can get away with a lot more than bad teammates and guys that are lazy.
Goddamn right.
Hey, how did your experience in junior, like, prepare you for being a head coach? Not just an assistant coach in the NHL, but a head coach and, like, winning. I think you coached all those years with Bob Bugner there in Windsor as an assistant, won a couple of Mem Cups. And then you go to Oshawa, you win another Memorial Cup. Our boy Dakota Mermis, St. Louis kid, was on that roster for you.
Yep.
So, like, winning, being around the young kids, like, how does that prepare you, especially in that league specifically? Does it truly prepare you? Like, are you ready once you get to the NHL after doing that?
Well, I think it's the closest because, you know, even though it is a weekend league, it's 66 games jammed into, you know, a quick time frame. It's also, you know, back-to-back games, it's travel. It's the same playoff format where you got to win four series, seven-game series. Yep. It's treated like a mini NHL. You know, some of the best coaches in the league have, you know, come from the CHL. So, yes, it did prepare me. The only thing is junior hockey, you're dealing with a lot more parents and agents and things like this, and guys are really listening because they're trying to make it, trying to, you know, to make their first dollar in the game. And the game has significantly changed. I mean, when I was playing, and I'm sure Janny's the same way, you know, if you're not going good, the coach comes in and yells and screams at you. And, you know, and I was much like that, you know, through most of my junior career. But as you realize, you know, parents aren't like that with their kids anymore. So if you're the only person yelling at them, they're freaked. They don't understand what's going on. And the game has changed where it's way more communication, way more trust involved. And I think that helped me because all the good teams that we, you know, I coached in junior, I won three Memorial Cups. They were the closest knit groups. And I think ultimately at the end, the players trusted me as a coach, whether as an assistant or head coach, I think they knew I had their back regardless. And I try and keep that same thing in the NHL. It's hard because there's so many players and there's money involved and families involved, but it certainly got me ready to get to the NHL.
So, okay, it's so funny though, DJ. You played in Windsor. I played in Windsor. Like, there wasn't much. No, we went to high school. No one's looking after us. Sign when you're 18 years old. You got a little bit of money. You're drafted. You know you're gone. Like, you can't control the players in the OHL. But coaching the OHL, it's easy because they're not making a ton of money, but you know they're going to be gone, so it's kind of easy. But on the other hand, they don't have many rules. Like, you don't have to be in school. You don't have to do this. I mean, maybe nowadays you do, but what's the difference between coaching the guys in the OHL and the NHL? I mean, the guys in the OHL had pretty much freelance to do a lot of different things, and then now it's a business.
Oh, for sure it is. It really changed in the OHL in the last, you know, probably I'm going to say, there was a big changeover in about 2005 era, 2005, 2006, that era where scholarships started being taken over by the league. So the league paid them so that owners, you know, no one could ever defunct or whatever. And then the league and teams really started to hone in on the schooling and the curfew because what happened is a lot of lawsuits come into play. So it wasn't the OHL that me or you played in years ago. It was much more policed with curfews every night. you know, agents, parents, people getting involved. In saying that, you're right. It's not like the NHL. It's hard. You know, the hard part about the NHL is, you know, these guys make so much money, you know, some of them. How do you get them to listen to you when they've had 30 coaches in their life? You know, like, and then the mistake I think a lot of people make is they stop coaching that person because they think that this guy's been around forever. And what I found is these guys want to be coached no matter how old they are. They want to be pushed. They want to be coached. And if for that, it keeps it a little bit like junior because you're always coaching in junior. And I think you just stay as close to your personality as possible and you won't have an issue no matter what league you're in.
The Cam and Strick podcast is brought to you by CarShield. You know, nothing more frustrating, Cam, than when that engine light comes on and you know right off the bat you're going to have to spend thousands of dollars to repair your vehicle. Call 800-857-2481. Mention the promo code CAM or visit carshield.com and use the code CAM to save 10%. Yeah. That's carshield.com. A deductible may apply. Save yourself money. Cam. Sign up and get your coverage now with carshield.com. Cam. Now back to the interview. Hey, DJ.
Yeah, I get that.
Listen, how stressful is it being a head coach? Like, especially in a Canadian market. I know, listen, you coached in Toronto. That's probably a different animal than Ottawa. But listen, it's still Canada in Ottawa. But like the stress, the daily stress every single day.
Paper.
Explain everything. It. Like what's it like being a head coach at the highest level?
It's a social media that your family and kids and people read. And you know what? I try not to even turn on, you know, during the season, I don't try and read any of that stuff. I don't have Twitter. I don't have any of that stuff. So I try and, you know, get that out as far as possible. And then, you know, the people that are closest to my life know that I don't want to hear what Joe Blow had to say about me,
yeah.
You know, or my team, but you know, the people that know me the best know that I really don't want to talk hockey when I'm with them. You know, talk hockey in the summer, that's great. But do I want to hear what somebody said about me on Twitter? No, I don't. The hard part is your family can't get away from that. And, you know, there's, you know, this year with them when the start was really bad, I know my son came to me, he's 17 years old, drafted by London in the second round. And he's like, some guy was all over him on Twitter threatening him, your dad should be fired. And that was really the first experience where I was like, wow. Like, some people go way over the line. Like, wow. You know, like, this has nothing to do with my kid, you know, but Canada's passionate and people love their teams. But that is the unfortunate part, and there's a lot of stress. But you know what? With the opportunity to be a head coach comes stress. And you know what? I'll take the stress. It's the privilege of being a 107 coaches in the NHL.
Yeah, dude, suck it up. You're right. You're in a
exactly.
But how do you balance the social media aspect with the players, though? What if you got some big dicks coming on? They got a bunch of followers. They got this going on, and now they're kind of like, you know, after games they start tweeting things out. Nothing negative against you, but like it's kind of trending in a weird direction. How do you balance that as an organization?
Well, I think the players are getting more and more educated. The NHL is doing a great job of you know, letting them know. Like, once it's out there, it's out there.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're sending it or your buddy's sending it or someone sends it to you and you respond. Like, you know, I think the social media came on so quick and people weren't ready, you know, for this, you know, as to, you know, the length at which one comment can go, you know, whatever topic you're talking about. So I think guys are so much more informed today and they're doing a better job of not putting, you know, everything and anything out there. You know, they trying to stay a little more private because it's great when she's going good, but when she gets going bad, they're coming at you. So, you know, so it's better just to stay kind of in the middle. Oh yeah. Just stay in the middle and stay out of the way and put your nose down and go to work.
Yep. Play a good game. That's all that matters.
But DJ, the way these kids, like, they communicate nowadays,
you're a fight
right?
Away. Cam knows you're a fight away from a good game at all times, no matter how bad you're playing.
Just go play a good game. Everybody's going to love you.
Hey, but these kids, the way they communicate, they text, they're always on their phones and whatever. Like, I like some of the players on, like, Arizona, for example, they would say, like, Rick Tocchet would text them late at night. Hey, did you see this play? Did you watch this game? Like, do you do that? Like, will you interact with your players? Like, text them away from the rink, talk hockey. Like, is there a fine line? Can you be their buddy?
Yeah.
Are you not allowed to be? Like,
well, I do for sure. Not so much about hockey. I do when a guy, if I feel the guy is mentally getting away or really down on himself, or I feel that, you know, by me texting or calling him, I could get him to feel better, or, you know, it's going to help him, then I'll do that situation. You know, I'm an emotional guy. Like, after games, it's easy to rip on your guys and what have you. Sometimes, you know, after a game, you know, and you're sitting there and you text a guy and you just want to text a guy, hey, man, it was a hell of a game. You know what? Keep bringing that. Everything's fine. Like, you know, a lot of times I think coaching, people always want to tell you when they want something fixed. I think it's good sometimes just to reach out and tell people when they're doing it right.
Damn right. No,
100%. I like that.
DJ, even you fucking spank me on my ass when I get off a shift because I got the fucking puck out of the zone, which I should do. But if you give me a little pat on the back, I'm like, oh, thank you. Oh, I'm going to go do it again. Like, no, that helps. Let me ask you this, though, DJ, real quick. What if somebody has a young kid has a weird relationship with somebody? And you're like, you kind of know what's going on. The guys are talking about it a little bit. Like, what if something like intimate, internal, like that happens? How do you get involved? What do you do? Because it's got to happen once in a while.
Well, you know, it hasn't happened for me, but I know what you know, it could happen in many different scenarios. In that situation, I think you got to be, you know, you got to be open with your general manager, your assistant general manager, whoever it is, and try and get the best advice, because there's a lot of touchy situations. I mean, at the end of the day, they're hockey players. You know, we don't control what they do in their personal life. You know, but if it's affecting the team, ultimately, you have to get involved, because my job as a coach is to get the team to play the best. So if it's something that's affecting our team, then it needs to be either rectified or talked about. You know, if it's not affecting the team, then it's none of my business and move on, you know, like nothing's happening.
Yeah.
Write that down, Andy, real quick.
Write that down. hey,
we've seen that.
You mentioned, like, the parents, like, in junior. Like, you probably don't miss that, do you? Like, parents calling you after games and, like, dealing with that?
Jesus.
Like, No, I don't miss that at all.
Is there anything close to that in the NHL, though? Like, I know a parent, like, wouldn't call you. I'm sure they call a GM, though, or an agent. Yeah. Like, they're calling their agent left and right. And the agents are calling the GMs all the time.
For sure they do. I mean, you know, usually they're probably the same people that, you know, that did it all the way up. And at the end of the day, we all know this. Coaches are trying to win the game. So, I mean, I'm not always right, but chances are if I didn't have the kid on in the last minute or he's not on the power play, it's me and the other coaches or whoever. We're trying to win. Like, no one's trying to screw anyone. I think you figure that over the years that, you know, you're doing everything in your power to win. So sometimes, you know, people, especially parents, see it another way. And ultimately what I see is it always ends up hurting the kid, because, you know, if the kid truly feels it, he'll come and talk to you himself. You know, when it's parent driven, I just find there's so much pressure putting on the kid. He may not even feel that way. And his parents or his dad or mom might be telling him, you should be getting this, you should be getting this.
God.
And every minute you spend wasting energy on that is time that you can't get better, and it's hard to push forward. That's why it doesn't happen very often that I can remember in junior parents that got involved, you know, to an nth degree that the kid ever made it past junior, because usually it probably meant the kid A wasn't good enough, or B, it was the parent that was more driven than the child. And at the end of the day, we know that the NHL is the hard, you know, for hockey, the hardest league in the world to make. And if you're not a 1,000,000% all in, you're not going to play.
Well, or he's a pussy, or his billet family's fucked up. So when you're playing
there's that.
That's what I mean, though. Like, what if they? I went through a couple weird things. No, well, just one weird thing. But do you notice that in junior? So like, we're like, oh, this is the billet family, and then you kind of look and you're like, yeah, they're kind of fucked up a little bit. Like, what do we do about this? Do we play it? Like, what do you like? Right? I mean, fuck. Because if they pay you,
If they're affecting the team again, we'd take them out of that house, because, you know, the same thing, you know, there's some of the billets are at home coaching the kid.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen a lot. Like you said, in weird situations that a kid, you know, will be getting coached from his billet parents and saying, hey, you're not playing enough, you're whatever. That is, I mean, that's cancer in itself. You know, that's something that has to be stopped immediately. So if we sense that, for sure, we'd move the kid out of there, because when you go home, you know the best players in the world. When they go home, they got to get away from the game.
Yeah, man.
I mean, if you go home and you can't get away from the game, your dad or mom or your billets are talking about it and making you answer questions. I mean, it's just going to be with you all the time. You'll be so stressed out, you won't be able to play.
Well,
so,
mine watch me sleep at night, which is very bizarre. If they watch you sleep at night, you got to cut it off, right? If they're 85 years old.
Yeah. I'd go to the owner right there and I'd put an end to that. Yeah.
Okay. So listen, you mentioned your own son. He's a second round pick of London, but with your job, like you're traveling nonstop. I mean, you're 24/7 with your job. And my little guy's just getting started. I've been coaching AAA hockey for a long time. So I know the commitment that these guys go through just to make it. I mean, through AAA hockey, let alone get to major junior. So how do you balance your time? Like, how do you stay on top of what he's doing? And does it kill you when you can't be there all the time watching his games?
It does, for sure, but I think he's happier. I think it's less pressure on him when I'm there. You know, because I'm there, you got the – you know, when I was in the OHL coaching, he lived back in Windsor. And he played here, and then he came with me to Ottawa. When I was in Toronto, he still played back here. So, I would, get to catch some of the games. But I would go, and all the parents would be like, "Oh, that's the assistant coach of the Maple Leafs." And I just feel like it put a lot of pressure on him. So, it was crummy for me that I couldn't get to watch all the games. But, for him, less pressure. With his mom there, and her not really knowing the game, and just. No matter how he played, it was a good thing. So I think that was perfect for him when he was young. He moved with me to Ottawa. It was the best thing that happened. He played in it's like a super midget league there. And that's where he got drafted, by London. I was able to watch him all the time. He played for Sean Donovan. I don't know if you know him. Played, just under 1,000 games in the NHL. It was just great for him. Since then, he's taken off. And to be honest, I've watched so many people, even my own friends, that have really ruined the fun for their kids by pushing them so hard, putting them in skating, putting them in all these things. I did none of that. I made him play baseball and he loved it. We put the skates away May 15th and, people would tell me all the time, "You got to get him in this." I said, "Okay." I played in the league. I played in the NHL. And some guy that's, never played hockey, tell me what I got to do. And at the end of the day, I've never pushed my son. It's up to him. I think we all know how hard it is to make the league. And he's starting to get hungry now, and that's good for him. But I feel if I pushed him too hard, he wouldn't even be where he's at right now. He probably would have quit like most of his buddies.
Hey, if I would have told you back when you were like playing junior in Windsor that like you'd end up coaching in the National Hockey League, like, would you believe me? Like, was coaching always in your blood? Did you feel like, maybe that would be something you'd want to do when you were younger? Like, how'd you get into coaching?
100%. I knew I'd be a coach wire to wire. I think what happened with me is I had some bad coaches along the way and they just didn't communicate at all. And I just felt like, this guy knows what he's talking about hockey wise. I just felt like, and I was a real good junior player and then went on to be an average, maybe an above average American League player and a crummy NHL player. And you know what? I just felt like there was times I could take my equipment off and I feel like I could help this team better if I was just communicating and making guys feel good. Cause it was, in that 90 era, in 1990 era, it was just do your job and shut up. And, you really didn't know, what you're supposed to do and you're getting yelled at. It was just, there was so much lack of communication. I'm like, I can't wait till this is over and I can coach because I think I can get players to play hard and play for me, and I think I can have success.
Time to talk a little bit about Daredevil Hockey, the ultimate in performance plus protection. Daredevil is a lightweight compression-based layer designed with Kevlar cut-resistant fabric overlays that protects all the vulnerable areas of the upper and lower body from skate lacerations. Get yours now. www.daredevilhockey.com. Use that promo code Cam and Strick. You'll save 25%. Yeah, now back to the interview.
Let's go. Well, why didn't you think you played that much in the NHL? Like, why couldn't you figure it out? Because you were tough.
Well, you know, I retired with concussions. I retired with concussions. That's I was just, early on they switched general managers a bunch in Toronto, and I had a couple really good years, but didn't get games in American League. I had like 45 points as a D, and 250 penalty minutes, or whatever it was. And I didn't even get a game. And then, you know, and then finally I got my opportunity in Colorado, and they had really good D in front of me. And I felt that year and the following year, I was up and down with Hershey. I was a captain, where I had found my groove, where I felt like I did in junior. I could make plays. Yeah. I could still be, you know, fight. I could do all that. I feel like I would have been one of those guys that would have played from 27 to 35, you know, because I liked it so much.
England, Derek England.
Exactly. But I had a little more skill. He might have been tougher, but, you know, but what happened, I get hit from behind, and then, you know, all the fighting must have combined. I ended up being out for like 18 months with concussion symptoms and all this. So I was out so long, I'm like, they offered me an opportunity to come help in Windsor, and I was like, you know, for me to come back, if I get hit again, I don't think I could do two more years of this. You know, like, you know, I was sleeping in a closet. It was, you know, it was so bad, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go to coaching now. But I feel like had I not, you know, got injured, I feel like I'd have been one of those guys that would have played the majority of my games, you know, later in his career, you know, as a 6'5", 6'7" defenseman. But I had figured it out mentally. I knew the game so much better.
How bad were the concussions, dude? We get all these guys on, man. Like, explain it. Because I went through withdrawals with, like drugs and shit. Was it, like, explain the concussion part.
I battled through everyone. I don't know if I missed a game or two until the one that finished me. I got one. I got hit from behind. Then I went and fought the guy that hit me, who wasn't a tough guy. You know, shouldn't have hit me from behind. It was a gutless move. And then when instead of him fighting me, he pulls me by my pants, you know, and we kind of just land, you know, on my tailbone. Well, you're finding out it shoots up your spine and give me a second concussion.
So you hit your spine, the tailbone, he threw you down. It connects up to your.
And it can shoot up your spine and rattle your brainstem. So I had a concussion the shift before. Real, like a bad one. I should have left, but I wanted to kill the guy. So I come back, and then he doesn't fight me, and he just grabs my pants and kind of flips me. Well, I land on my tailbone later, finding out, you know, the reason my concussion was so bad is because I got 2 in 10 minutes. That ball on my tailbone ended up making it 2 for 1, and that finished my career. So, you know, the symptoms, I can tell you, like, the nausea, the ear and jaw pain was incredible. Like for well over a year. And then the anxiety, I didn't have anxiety or anything prior to that. Then the anxiety came on. I had panic attack. I had a whole bunch of stuff going on. Cause you go from being so active to sitting in a house doing nothing for one whole year, you know, and your life, you're sitting there going, what am I going to do? You know? And I think a lot of the symptoms are the concussion. And then the other part is the lack of movement. Now they do such a better job. You know, after a week or two, they get you up and they get you moving and they get you, you know, exercising and get some blood in your brain. But back then that wasn't the study that they had. So I essentially went through about a year and a half of absolute torture. I would say 9 out of 10 headaches every single day for 18 months.
Oh my God, dude.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Like, you know, how patient are you with your players who say, listen, coach, I can't go today, man. I go on the ice for 5-10 minutes, ride the bike, whatever. They're so messed up. Like, do you understand what they're going through? Because, you know, coaches get frustrated. Yeah, they get frustrated. They lose patience with players who don't fight through it.
Not when it comes to the brain. The trainers are the best in the world. They can recognize when there's an issue. And if there is, the worst thing you can do to someone who has a concussion is put pressure on them to come back.
Yeah.
Because that stress and anxiety is going to make the symptoms 10 times worse. So the worst thing you can do to ask somebody is when they have a concussion, hey, when do you think you'll be back? How you feeling? Because at the end of the day, you know, it's all just adding up. This guy in his head is saying to himself, you know, I wonder how long. And, you know, any kind of pressure makes it worse. And it starts to add on the guy. So I can tell you, if I think at all that a guy has symptoms, I would never put him on the ice.
All right. Do you view fighting any differently now? I mean, Brady Tkachuk, one of your best players, led the league in fighting majors, which is crazy.
Yeah, he did.
Which is crazy. But do you view fighting any differently?
I'll be honest with you, I didn't want him. I didn't want him to. I mean, we bring guys in every year around him.
Yeah, you did.
To make sure he doesn't have to. I got to tell you, like, he's mean, man. He's just amazing. He's mean. And he plays hard. And you know what? He ain't waiting for somebody to come save him. You know, like, if I can get him off the ice, you know, and a teammate could jump in, that'd be great. But, you know.
Yeah, but there's no one beating him up, though. There's no one. Sorry to cut you. I know Andy gets pissed. But there's no one beating him up at this point, though, right? So, like, if he does.
No, there wouldn't be too many. He's too big. He's too strong. You know, like, he can grab you and throw you down. I think he gets bigger by the week. Every time I look at him, he looks like he grew an inch. Threw on five. Like, he's a monster, man. Like, and he's mean. Like, when he's ultra competitive. And when he's fighting is when he really gets wound up. Someone hits a teammate. It's a tight game. You know, he's super, super competitive. And, you know, when he's fighting, he's not fighting like a staged fight where there's no energy there or adrenaline. Yeah. He's fighting when he's at his angriest moment. And that's a scary guy to fight when he's fighting out of complete, you know, anger. And, you know, I haven't seen anyone, you know, knock on wood, that's been able to throw him around. Certainly we don't want him getting hurt, but that's part of his game. That, you know, I'm not on the other team, but I can tell you from playing, there can't be anyone in our division that enjoys playing him. He's going to run you over. He can beat you up. And then he can also outscore your guys. So it's not like you can say to him, hey, you're no good. Why would I fight you? You know, he's the best player. So, like, what you don't really got much to say to a guy who's the toughest, the best player. You know, really, you just be quiet and say nothing.
Hey, what are those games like when you're playing Calgary? And there's, like, there's so much buildup, Brady versus Matthew. Like, how do you calm down the situation versus do you just allow it to take on a life of its own and allow the theatrics to kind of take over pregame?
I'll be honest. I think neither of the brothers enjoy it.
No, I agree with you.
They don't play as emotional. They do not play as emotional against each other. They try and make it up, and they try and, you know, show their team that they're this and that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they're brothers. You're not meant to fight against your brother. You are in the living room, but not in front of, you know, millions of people. You know, should you be... You know, I remember we were playing this year, and they were talking about how Brady and Matthew might fight. I'm like, they're best friends. Yeah, they wrestle around in their backyard and they might fight in their driveway, but they're not going to do it for show in front of millions of people. And I told Brady, I'm like, I'm sure your mother would come and slap you both, you know, if something like that happened. But I can see both of them. You know, it's more of a game where they just want it to be over with. They play hockey and move on. And I think they're glad, you know, when they don't have to play each other.
Well, so you're telling me the two biggest, toughest guys in the Canadian division don't fight each other? I don't believe that. And I called Brady. No. My point is, like, they talked about, like, if Matthew runs somebody over and Brady's on the ice, I don't give a damn if it's your brother. So you're going to be like, no, guys, somebody else do this because he's my brother and my mom, Chantel, will get mad. Come on.
I think he would grab him, but I don't think his brother would put him in that spot. That's my take, is that they play a little cleaner in that game because they know. Why would you want to put your brother in that situation? You know what I mean? Like, and I, you know, I know the mentality of it, but I can just, they both seem to play a little more hockey and a little less over the edge when they play each other. And I'll be happy that we go back to our regular divisions and, you know, we get to play them a couple times a year. You know, so I think both players will excel not playing against each other.
I think business comes before family. I think you're right, though, man. Like, listen, they hate talking about it. They hate when people ask if you'd fight your brother. It's like, it's almost nauseating.
It's ridiculous.
But so, they're not going to.
Just do it. If you're going to do it, then do it. Yeah. You shouldn't think about it. It's spontaneous. Sorry, Andy.
Yeah.
They're not
going to do it. I mean, they're not going to fight each other. But
they're not going to do it. I mean, you know what? I was thinking. There's so many things in the world, and there's so many times that, you know, you got to do certain things. One of them, you know, this one you can't take back is you and your brother fighting on tape, you know, and I know, hey, believe me, and I believe in all the toughness and everything that goes with it. You certainly, I wouldn't want to see those two do it. I don't think their parents would want to see it. You know, I don't even like matching them up against each other. I purposely, you know, we'll play Brady's line against another line when I get last change.
Wow.
You know, just so we don't even have to run into that spot.
Really? Just because of that? Well, you got to think the family wouldn't want it, and Andy and all you guys wouldn't want it, but 90 million people in Canada would want it, just so you know.
Well, for sure they would, But I'm worried about the well-being of my own player. And you know what? I think Brady plays better when he plays not against his brother. So he's playing against another line. I think I'm getting a better game out of Brady.
Hey, how much did it, like you mentioned bringing on some tough guys, like a guy like Austin Watson, like what's he like, the coach? I felt like, you know, talking to some people in Nashville, like people don't really know what he's all about, who he is and whatever. Like him, Goodbranson, some of these other people that you brought on board, whatever. How did that change the overall dynamic of your team?
Waddy's unbelievable. I had him in junior for a brief stint, and then we traded for Zach Kazian to try and win the Mem Cup, and we ended up winning our second one. But Waddy is he's a completely selfless player that has absolutely no fear in his body whatsoever. If you tell him, he's not a tough guy. Like, he never fought in junior. He had to do this to stay in the NHL. And if you ask him, he'll tell you that he was willing to do anything to stay in the league. And I think any coach in the league will take a player on their team that's willing to do anything to stay. And Austin Watson's made himself a shot-blocking machine that'll stick up for his teammates, who's in, you know, starting to get, I think, a little bit of his touchback and swagger. I think he's a better player than maybe he, you know, showed there at the end in Nashville. He's got his life back together. He only lives a couple blocks from me in Ottawa. He's got a couple kids. Things are going really well for him. I couldn't be happier for him, and I would take him on my team any day.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And guys who will play with him say the same thing.
Big, yeah.
All right, so listen, we had Mike Babcock on the podcast a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago, whatever.
Yeah, it was a month.
And it was an interesting conversation. Like, he's interesting. But what was it like for you? I mean, coaching with him, do you feel like you took a lot of things from him that you use? Like, what's your relationship like with him? Do you talk to him often? Like, break that experience down for us.
Well, one of the things with him, he's a tireless worker. And, you know, you want to get to the NHL as a head coach, so how do I get there? And, you know, I got to work under a guy like him. I got to work under Barry Trotz, Pete DeBoer. Like, to me, the fastest route there is to go work for a guy that's been in the league a long time, and you can learn and get yourself ready to be an NHL head coach. And, you know, he's up at 6 in the morning. He's a guy that, you know, pushes your staff to the nth degree. And it's not for everybody, but at the end of the day, for me, he helped me be ready for my opportunity. You know, he has different views coaching than I, but you know, at the end of the day, sorry, cut out there. At the end of the day, both have different ideas on how to win the game. But what I took from him is how prepared he is and how serious he takes every game. And if you do that in the NHL and you coach every game like you lost your last one, you're going to have a chance.
Yeah. So how do you prepare yourself, though? Like, every coach has something different, right? Andy, we always hear about Andy Murray, would have the, you know, the lineup. And people would – Keith Tkachuk would be – he'd put a towel down so Andy Murray wouldn't put the lineup sheet under his door.
Hotel room door.
His hotel room door. And I'm like – fuck that. Give me that goddamn lineup sheet. I want to see who I'm fighting tonight. Like, what? Let me read shit. Like, is there anything specific that you do or something unique that you do to get the boys prepared that's different than anybody else?
I don't know if I do anything different. I think what I do is I try and create constant, build up to any particular game. And I know it's hard over 82 games. I think if you go back to junior, you know, when you'd go to London and you felt that there's something extra in the game and, you know, they're good, you're good, they're tough, you're tough. You know, how do you recreate that over and over and over for 82 games? It's hard to do, but I feel the more you can recreate situations where you can motivate your team through anger, through retribution, through whatever the heck it is, you're going to scratch and claw and get more points. And not every coach believes in that, but I believe that you can motivate your team to have a little more jam for every team.
Hey, what do you think of the North Division this year? And, like, what was it like? I mean, for you, like, watching some of these games, you're going to see it tonight. The Islanders play tonight. Packed house. We saw it in Vegas, packed house. Now they got to go to Montreal.
Oh, God. Back in time.
What was it like for you, first off? I mean, do you buy into this notion that the North was weaker than the other divisions? I'd be interested to get your take on that. But just not having fans the whole year, like, how difficult was that?
Well, I think when you have to measure what the hardest division is, it depends what team it is. So for us, that was a lottery team. You know, one of the seven teams that didn't play in the bubble the year before. Every team we played every night played in that round robin. Mm-hmm. You know, some went on, to the second round or whatever it was. Where if you look at some of the other divisions, you know, like out west, for example, three of the teams that didn't play in the bubble all played in one division. So for them, you know, they get to play each other 20 times out of 56 games. So for me, it was better for our team because we got to play, you know, Toronto, Winnipeg, every night, Edmonton. Every night we played a team that was supposed to beat us, that was ahead of us in the standings. We never got an easy game all year. And, you know, what everyone thought, I guess, Montreal was the fourth best team in our division, you know, ended up winning it. And here they are 1-1 with Vegas, you know. But there's one thing to be said about Montreal of the teams. You know, outside of us, I think they're the toughest team in the North Division. The biggest, toughest D. They, you know, ultimately right now they have the best goalie. So, I mean, I don't know. It's tough to say what division's better because you never got to play against the other teams. But I know from a team that missed, I never got an easy matchup.
Were you looking at Montreal like, damn, they are pretty damn good. Like, they got it. Were you looking at them all year like that? Or did it just pop up?
No, we played them well. You know what? We were 6-3-1 against them this year. We played them as good as anyone, them in Calgary. For whatever reason, sometimes you just play good against teams. I think one of it is Brady. You know, Brady's not afraid of anyone. He can smack their big guys. He's hard to keep off the goalie. You know, he finds another gear against Montreal. And, you know, I don't think there's a lot of players out there like him that, you know, that impose that threat on their big, mean guys. And, you know, as good or as big as certain guys are, Brady, you know, he fought Weber this year. I just think, you know, he creates a lot of issues. He forechecks hard. He hits you. He can fight you. I just think, you know, he was one of the guys that could penetrate some of their toughness.
Yeah, that's what you're talking about, too, when Brady fights anger because he was pissed, pissed off in that Shea Weber fight. Cam and Strick podcast here for our boy Dan Bellman with Bellman.com.
Yeah, baby.
You need some new wheels? Mm. Why not get a Cadillac, a Buick, a GMC? Yeah. Head out to Troy today. And again, don't forget about Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram right across the street.
No doubt.
Right there in Troy, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Visit them online. Check out their new selection, the pre-owned selection, the best service you will find anywhere in the country. Bellman.com. BehlmanN.com. Get yourself some new wheels in time for the summer.
Yeah.
Now back to the interview. Hey,
love it.
Tell me about this Josh Norris kid. Like, is he a legit, number one center? Is that too much? Like, is that setting the bar too high? Like, there's games I watch you guys play. I'm like, wow, he can be that guy. He can be at that level. Like, this guy is a really good young hockey player. Like, what's his upside?
Well, you know what? It is a hard label. When you say one, there's 1A, Bs, and Cs. You know, when you look at 1A, you're looking at McKinnon, the Barkovs, the Matthews, the McDavids, those guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're in a class by themselves. So to put pressure on a young guy to ask him to be that is a lot. But what he is a two-way player that's got a scoring knack on the power play. He can skate. He's really competitive. He's tough. And he can defend. So I think what he's, you know, he's a 1B, you know, as a finished product, more of a 2 probably today.
Yeah.
But one thing you can do is you can put him out there against anybody, and you're not going to run him out of the building. He can defend you. He can skate with you. He can check you. So, you know, he's our 1, but I think he'll only continue to get better.
Okay, look, you know, we skate with all the alumni. I invite Andy out to skate with the alumni. And these alumni skates, actually, he does actually really well. I try to chirp him all the time, but he, like, dangles guys. And it actually pisses me the fuck off, to be honest with you.
Matthew Tkachuk, by the way, is my line mate.
Sit the fuck down. All right, he doesn't want to be here. Here's the deal. We're with all the guys, man, and including Jeff Brown, who we absolutely adore. How's Logan doing? What does he need to do? And we see this kid come in. Andy and I, hold on one second. We've been skating with him for a long time. He's 6'6". He's a center. He can move around. What does he need to do here to get on that roster? And just be honest with it.
Well, Well, the problem is the issue is this year, and he would have had a lot of opportunity. He was hurt the entire year.
Well, that hurts.
You know, he.
Well, besides you know, that, what else?
Yeah, like honestly, he was every time he was scheduled to play, he got hurt in the minors or something happened. So this was the perfect year to find out. Can he play? We think he can play. It's just how much can he contribute? I think he's he's as good on the power play as anyone out there in any league. You know, the big thing for a guy at 6'6" is the pace of your game. And I don't think it's fair to ask a guy at 6'6", at 18, 19, 20 years old to be able to get up and down the ice like everyone else, because it just takes you a long time. And when I watch him play in the American League, he dominates. He's just got to show that it can translate into the NHL. And like I said, unfortunate this year that he was injured as much as he was, because when you're injured for a month and you're in a watered down American League this year because of the situation, that you're coming up playing against, or practicing with guys that have been skating in a fast division all year. One thing about our division is fast. Winnipeg's fast. Edmonton's fast. Yep. Toronto's are some fast teams, and then you're coming up, if you were just going back to the American League, it'd be hard after a month off, let alone to have to come right up. There wasn't a lot of games down there. So for me, it was a tough year for him that way. He only got in the one game at the end of the year. And you know what? He's a kid that can make plays. He's big. He's strong. And you'd be crazy to count him out at that size and that kind
of
skill.
Pace of play.
Yeah,
pace of play. That's what I write down. So if Jeff asked me in the locker room,
pace of play.
It's fucking pace of play. Figure it out.
Yeah, and
well, the game's just so fast. Yeah. The game is just so fast. But you know what? You don't have to be super fast if you can make plays and you can do that. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to show us that this year because he was hurt.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so hopefully he gets healthy and he's able to do that. I was looking at some of your junior rosters when you play junior. And you did put up some points, man. People need to know that. Like, you put up some points as a defenseman. A ton of penalty minutes.
The women love them.
And we had Ed Jovanovski on with us.
You could get points from anywhere in Windsor. You could flip it from anywhere. The neutral zone was so small.
Well, I didn't do it.
Except Cam couldn't. Cam couldn't. Hey, listen. You play with Jovo. He was great when he came out with us. Great conversation. But I got to know about Matt Cook. Like, you play with Matt Cook. Like, was he who he was in the NHL back in junior? Did he evolve into that guy? Like, were you surprised to see him kind of get caught up in some of the stuff? Like, I don't know if you guys are really tight or not. Like, what was he like in junior?
You know what? I got respect for him, man. He was a 10th round pick to the Windsor Spitfires. He came in and he ran everyone out of the building. And he can't fight, and yet he stood up when he had to and took his lickings. And then, you know what the most impressive one is? He went undrafted, his rookie year, and then we ended up playing the Plymouth Whalers in the Ben Junior Wings in the first round. And we went to seven games. He hit Brian Berard about 700 times, and he didn't get drafted. So Toronto invited him to training camp the following year, and I was traded to Toronto, so I went there while he was there. He ran everyone out of the building in training camp. Like, Ty Domi came over and grabbed him and said, "Kid, hit one more guy, you're dead." And he didn't stop. He was hitting Dougie Gilmore, and Toronto signed him, but something happened. They didn't get it in time or what happened, and so he became a free agent again. He went back. Vancouver drafted him. And you know what? I'm not surprised. I just think, the game tightens up. You know, some of those hits that used to be, 4 minutes back in the day are now 15-game suspension.
Exactly. So
he played on the edge wire to wire. He's an incredibly explosive skater and hitter that he's one of those. He's not that big frame. Like, he's probably only 190 pounds. And, when he hits you, like, for whatever reason, he just it sends guys. And, he can skate. He gets there with velocity. And you know what? I got to give him credit for being a 10th round pick, being undrafted. He made a heck of a career for himself.
Yeah, well, he doesn't come on our podcast. And as Stevie Webb, no. I'm not that serious, because he's kind of being a wimpy about it. And we're like, come on, we've all had bad hits. But like a Steve Webb, did you play with Stevie Webb back in the day? DJ?
No, I didn't play with Webb. He was right before me. I remember him exactly. He got drafted by Windsor in the second round. I know exactly who he is.
At least he hit and he like got his ass kicked by like Razor and stuff. Like Cookie didn't fight that much. I know Evander Kane buckled him a couple times, but that's those kind of guys that kind of do piss me off a little bit, and that's why we went him on the podcast. Because he'd fucking rock guys, man. But at least Cookie or at least Webby would fight the dudes. But he'd kind of be like, oh, I don't know what to do. What happened? I didn't do anything. I don't know. It drives me fucking nuts. But yeah. It's all good, man. All good.
Well, no, I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm
saying. I know what you're saying. You're drilling guys, and you want them to own up to the big dog. And, you know, he fights a middleweight, and it's like he's getting away with it. You know, the guy he hurts out for 3 weeks, and he got to fight a flyweight, where.
Who's just there? Yeah.
If I do that. If I do that, it's Probert coming to get me.
And you're going toe-to-toe.
I don't get the easy way out. Like, I never have.
No. No, you have not.
Hey, coaching in the NHL just like playing in the NHL? Is it just as fun?
Know what it is. It is for me. I love it. It's not like the players because, player, you've got to show up and you give your 2 hours or 3 hours. And then you're on your own.
Yeah.
Coaching's, you've got so many more things that you have to check the box on. I mean, you have to deal with all the players, call ups. You have a boss, you have a manager, you have all these things.
Oh, yeah.
Not even close.
I mean, more like game day. The actual competition.
You're still one of 31, now 32 guys, head coaches in the NHL. It's still a heck of a feeling. To have your own franchise to coach, it's still to especially do it in Canada. 7 teams here, capital city.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not like being a player, but I mean, when you're done playing, this is absolutely the next best thing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean more like
that's what you
the competition.
I was going to say, listen,
I know you got to deal with like people upstairs above you. You like the players all leave and go home and play video games. You got to watch video and prepare for the next
DJ,
game.
DJ, so how's the own? Can you, if shit goes down, let me ask you something real quick. If the planes aren't nice, the food's not right, do you go up to the big boy and do bang on his door and say, hey, I need to talk to you?
You know what the thing is? It's regulated. Our food, our plane, everything is the same as everyone else in Canada. It's through the CBA. There's no complaining. It's we stay at the best hotels. Okay. We eat the best food.
Okay.
We all have chefs. So, I mean, if you're complaining, I don't know what league you're coming from, but we got her pretty good up here.
Yeah.
Well, I'm coming from the Louisiana League back in the Swamplands. No, I'm just saying, though, like, is there still, like, do you ever have to talk to the ownership group and just say, look, can we change this sort of thing? Like, does that ever happen? Or do you talk to people that do that? Like, is that even a question to ask?
Well, no, what happens is science changes all the time. Mm-hmm. The sleep doctor, the food right after here, there, what kind of food we're eating. That happens all the time, but it's readily available. It's just a matter of what you want. So now the food's getting cleaner and cleaner. We need it, right after practice, whatever it is. Those are things that happen on a daily basis, but, those funds and those things are allocated to get whatever you want, really.
Yeah,
so it's up to you. And your medicals and your sports science staff to set it up to give your players the best opportunity. And you know what? In Ottawa, we give our players every opportunity to succeed. And I don't think anyone would complain.
Yeah, no, they shouldn't be complaining. Hey, we need you to get a full 82-game season because, last year it was stopped early. This year
we had the
56-game season. We love the Senators. But, like, what's the one thing you wanted to change? Like, how much do you believe in, like, culture? Like, how do you define culture? How do you put your stamp on it? Like, how do you create, like, what you want from an identity standpoint and from, like, a culture standpoint as a head coach? How long does it take to truly achieve that?
Well, that's probably my biggest strength is culture and creating it. And it doesn't happen overnight. You know, you go through different players. Some guys fit in, some guys don't. You know when you have the right mix. And it's when they're cheering for each other. It's when you don't have one guy that's out for his own personal gain. He'd come off early to get a guy, his hat trick or whatever it is. You just know that feeling when you know, your minutes aren't as important. It's more about the group. And when you get that feeling, you got a chance to win every night. And I think we have that in Ottawa. These guys are close. Brady's,
yep.
You know, and Shabbat are the leaders of that group.
Oh, yeah.
And they care about each other. And you know, the biggest thing is as we continue to bring people in to help us, you know, there's still growing pains. I mean, Brady's 21. I mean, you look at Ovechkin and these guys, Steve Yzerman, took 13 years before they won a Stanley Cup. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think we're way ahead of the curve. But as we bring people in, you know, as much as they've got to be talented and help us, they have to fit into our group. And I think Pierre's done a real good job of that. And the players, you know, we know right away if a guy can fit in or he can't fit in. If he can't fit in, why waste any time? Let's get him out.
Don't do it. Yep.
Because ultimately, it's all about the team. And I just know when a guy rubs the team wrong and when and I think our group now knows it's 100% team first. I'll live with everything. If you're a team first guy, I can live with a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. Last couple for you, DJ. I know you got to go, buddy. But like, say they're going to next year, going to Vegas, and Brady and the older guys. Well, the older guys. Brady's not an older guy, but the older guys come up to you and like, hey, we need a day off. Like, we're gonna do this. We'll be back by this. This is what we're gonna do. Like, are you pretty cool about that kind of shit? Right? Like, depends. Yeah. Even if they're losing.
You know what? Because,
go ahead.
That might be the time to do it. You know, don't just give rewards because you're winning. Give rewards for the right reason, or give rewards because you think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, the guys getting together and, you know, Vegas has a football team. Say we're in town and the guys getting together and getting a box at the football game and, you know, and hanging out all day and doing what they got to do, having beers, whatever. You know, you got to come to work in the morning if that's, you know, the next day and you're going to find a way to win a little bit. But that little bit of camaraderie, you know, goes a long way and gets some guys out of their comfort zone and gets guys to know each other.
Exactly.
And to me, those are valuable times that you got to let it go.
Yeah. Because I will say this, DJ.
Hey, DJ, coach our alumni team.
I know. I want you to coach my 5-year-old. Hey, because your players love you, man. I will say
they
that. They really like you, man. Like,
they love you, man.
Apparently you pound like coffee like nobody else before games. You're just pounding coffee. But as a coach in the NHL, are you talking to your GM every single day? And how difficult is it to just stay on the outside when contract negotiations are going on? You're like, fuck, I want this guy on my roster. I want this guy on our team, but you really have no control over what's going on behind the scenes. Are you checking in with the GM all the time? Do you talk to your players about it? Do you stay out of it? Like, how do you handle that?
Well, I'm pretty open with my players and you know, what have you, and they know, you know, certain guys I want back. But me and Pierre talk every day. I think it's imperative that I listen to the information that he's got for me and ideas. And, you know, at the end of the day, Pierre lets me do my job. And I want, and he does his job. You know what? He made it to the NHL as one of 32 general managers for a reason. I have no interest in ever, you know, doing that, nor would I be good enough to ever do that. So I'd be crazy to get involved in something I'm not good at. I'm going to use Lou Lamoriello's line, stay in your lane.
Yep.
And that's exactly what it is. I'm a coach. I'm going to stay in my lane. I'm going to do my job. I mean, I'll fight for the guys that I want, but ultimately, his job is to give me the players and mine's to coach them. So I just stay in my lane. We're in constant communication. So if there's an issue that he has with me or my staff, that I'm well aware of it. And we can change it right away. But I learned so much. I was under Lou Lamoriello for 4 years or 3 years. Incredible man. And he just teaches you. If everyone just does their part, it's like he always says, it's like an orchestra. If you're the best drummer, you drum. If you're the best violinist, you violin.
Oh, yeah.
Just do what you do and do it to the best,
DJ,
and you'll have success.
I was the backup flute player. The weird guy with a weird shirt on the very back that none of the girls wanted to bang. That was me on the team.
Hey,
no, but you're right.
And we had Lou on, and he used he used that
Lou's
line
my
with us.
Boy,
When Lou came on with us, and he talked about that, and Cam talked about that.
He made fun of me.
Yeah.
Look, Lou made me a man. My
and
dad, you know
this,
how it is.
I'll promise you this. When you were the backup, whatever you were, the
flute
lead
player.
Singer wanted you in the band every day. I'll tell you that. When he went in, when he went into Chicago and Detroit, he was looking where his backup flute player was to make sure he was there.
And I've played that fucking flute like ba 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 ba.
Don't ever say never. Yeah. You may want to be a GM one day, DJ. You may want to be a GM DJ, down the road. You never know.
You're the man, dude. Everybody loves you. You're doing a fucking awesome job. Exactly. You got such a cool reputation.
That's our team.
Appreciate it, boys.
You're a fucking man.
We're coming.
Dude.
We're coming to Ottawa.
I'm coming to Ottawa.
I didn't even ask you about Jimmy Stutzla, man. I 10 seconds. That kid.
Come on, Andy.
How special is he? I don't want to upset the Ottawa fans.
He's a star, man. He's a star. He loves hockey. He reminds me of a bigger version of Pavel Bure.
Oh,
He's going to flat out score. He's going to flat out score. You know, when he ran a little bit out of gas last year with so many games condensed, Mitch Marner and these guys weren't even in the league at Timmy Stutzel's age. And look how good these guys are. The Pettersons of the world. This kid's going to be a star. He's a great kid. And a lot of people don't talk. He finishes checks. When a game gets rough, he goes out of his way and he's hacking and whacking. You know, he takes his piece of cheese too. So, he's a big part of this going forward. And, I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, all your guys.
Because of you, homeboy.
All your guys dominated the world championships too, man.
Fucking
so
dominant,
go get that contract
extension. He's playing for you.
We're getting you a contract extension now too, DJ. You know that.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, in Windsor, Windsor's a tough town. And they love their fighters.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I think there was a fan vote there. I think, Jenny, we won 2 Memorial Cups. We had Hall, Henrique, whatever. I think there was some poll, who's your favorite? I think Janny's still the favorite player in Spitfire history.
Hey.
Funny how that works, Andy.
Don't tell him
funny
that.
Funny how that works,
Why you
got to
end it like that, DJ?
I pimped it out. I told you.
I tell Cam to stay in his lane all the damn time. Jesus.
I'm telling you, there's some tough people in Windsor, and we had some stars, Jovanovski, Hall, Henrique, Ellis, Ryan Ellis.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Right at the top, there's Janny. I'm like, that's a Windsor crowd, boys.
Oh, funny how that works. God. Well, I party with the folk. That's
DJ,
what I do, baby.
The interview was going so well.
I party with
that?
The folk. Now we can talk about myself, though.
The interview,
DJ,
the interview was
the
going so strong.
Love you, buddy. We're going to be following you, man. We're going to be following you. I got your number,
we're
too,
We're coming
man.
To Ottawa. We're coming to Ottawa.
Damn right, homeboy. We'll see you, buddy.
Come anytime, boys. I appreciate it.
All
Love
right,
you, man.
Take
see
care,
you, dude.
DJ. See you, man.
All right, boys.
Take care.
All right, that was DJ Smith here on the Cam and Strick podcast, man. Cool-ass dude. He was tough back in the day, Cam, eh?
Yeah, he was very tough. Look at some of his old school scraps, and he played a lot, too. He was quarterback in power play, penalty killing, captain, from Windsor. In juniors, he was, the ultimate badass D-man. Yeah. And then he got hurt. I even asked him, why do you think he didn't play a long time? He got concussions and stuff like that because he put up a lot of points, too, man, as a D-man.
Yeah. No, he did.
He was ultimate.
He did in the American League, too. Toronto should have given him an opportunity.
I know. That's a perfect fucking guy for you.
I know.
I don't know. There's something. He got hurt, dude. That's what he said.
Yeah. Well, he did. He don't mess around with those concussions either.
Yeah, man.
How about talking about how mean Brady Tkachuk is? Mean is never a word that I would associate with Brady because he's such a nice kid. And
sweetheart.
You still look at him because you've known him for so long, right? It's almost you still see the little kid, Brady Tkachuk. But he's a grown-ass man. He's an absolute beast. I mean, this guy is a monster. And he does fight angry. I mean, you watch some of his fights, and he led the NHL in fighting majors, which is why it's relevant. But it's always retaliatory. Somebody pisses him off, does something.
He goes to the net.
He snaps.
Andy, remember back in the day when you would have to draw out the team that you're trying to play, they'd say, give me your 3 best qualities. And you write it down I'm fast. I know things. My dad always say fearless. So you put skate hard. My dad would say, put fearless. And that's exactly what Brady, he's fearless. Meaning I'm taking that fucking puck to the net and no one's going to stop me. And if you bump me into the goalie, I'm going to run into him. Not on purpose, but then I'm going to get up. I'm going to fight you. Then I'm going to chirp you. Then I'm going to throw my mouthpiece at you because I don't give a fuck. I'm fearless and I'm skilled. Everybody knows you're skilled anyway. But when you put that down, then if I'm a coach, I'm like, that's cool. I could tame that. That's what you want in your big boy, I'm taking this thing to the net, and no one's stopping me. I don't care if I get hurt, although you don't want me to get hurt, but you get my drift on that.
Mm-hmm. I like what he said about Austin Watson, too, man. They've got some tough guys on that team. And, Watson, a guy who never fought in junior, you don't think of it like that. He was a former first-round pick. I remember seeing Austin Watson at his draft. I think it was in Los Angeles. And he's one of 10 kids, Cam. like the family was there with like all these kids in the lobby. I'm like, are these all like, they're all like his brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
But he kind of, you know, got involved in some stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how much, weird. How responsible or how accurate the news and the details were.
Yeah.
You know, they were kind of sketchy. I remember talking to like Chris Mason and stuff like that. These guys who were close to Nashville, and he was playing with Nashville at the time. And I remember Mace and some of those other guys were like, yeah, the real details haven't come out about
no
that.
No shit, so, Andy. Now, you know, there's different situations. Every situation like that's different. Okay. Mm-hmm. Every single one.
Yeah.
This particular one, when you read it and you're like, okay. And let me tell you this. Austin Watson's not scoring 50 goals a year. He ain't that fucking good.
Right.
And he's still fucking playing in the NHL.
Exactly.
You think if he's a fucking horrible – come on.
Yeah.
He ain't fucking diet going bar down every – no, he's a grinder. He's mm-hmm. replaceable, and he's still in the NHL. So,
you talk about fearless. He's fearless.
Goddamn right. He's not going to knock you out, but he'll get in there and fucking hit you and fight you. And sure, they're tough. Ottawa's tough, dude. They're fun to watch. I'm sorry. They're fun to watch.
He's the type of tough guy I would want.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for, like, a modern-day tough guy, like,
yeah,
you know.
Kill penalty. He's a penalty killer, too. Like, they got to kill penalties, right? Like, you got to kill penalties if you're that guy for the mm-hmm. most part now. You know, like you got to be able to bring that extra element and kill. That Reaver doesn't have to, but I want my tough guys to kill penalties.
Hey, I wonder what is going to happen to Ryan Reeves. Like, does Vegas move on from him? They didn't even play him in the third round of the playoffs. He's a healthy scratch. He's got such a strong reputation. I know he loves it there. He does not want to leave Vegas.
No way.
But he's got such a big reputation and a loud reputation throughout the NHL. I mean, like, there'd be teams lining up, I would think,
to
bring him on board for a year or two.
For 1.2 or whatever?
2.5, yeah. I think he's making something crazy.
2.5?
I don't know. Something
Yeah, I'd keep him. He still hits you. Like, he's still, like, every time, like, he's like Patty in a way, but tougher and more intimidating. But like, he just – all of a sudden there's a goal and, like, he's in front of the net or something, right? I don't know. Like, he's always making something happen. Or if some kid comes around the net and they watch their fucking pass, then Reaver just puts him in the next week to a point where the kid's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And there's value in that. I'm sorry. Like, there just is. Intimidation still exists in the NHL, whether you like it or not.
I was a little surprised – that he wasn't playing for Vegas. I mean, he's been a big part of their identity, like, and kind of who they are.
I know, man.
He seems to get the bench going. Those guys are important, as you know, Cam, to have around the team, especially during a playoff series, you know? So, but they didn't play him. So anyway, DJ Smith, man, it was great having him on. We love talking to coaches and getting their perspective, dude.
Absolutely.
And you can tell just by listening to him, the fact that he's a player's coach, man. He's got a long career ahead of him. This guy will be a head coach in the NHL for a long time. So we thank DJ Smith for joining us here on the Cam and Strick podcast. As always, brought to you by CarShield. CarShield.com, 800-857-2481. Check it out right now. Customize your deal. You want it short-term, long-term, do whatever, however you want it. And figure that out and give yourself that peace of mind to know that you're not going to be stuck paying thousands and thousands of dollars to fix your car because you got CarShield. Again, mention that promo code CAM, and you're going to save 10%. Bellman.com, BehlmannN.com. Dan Bellman, one of the most influential people in the history of this country.
Oh,
we'll celebrate him today.
He's on the History Channel right
podcast.
He's with J.P. Morgan and fucking Chrysler and all the big dicks. Bellman's as far as St. Louis is concerned, that guy is a real deal. Everybody loves him. Does a lot of charity work. Does a lot of great stuff for youth hockey here. And he sells some dang good cars. Okay, Andy? Like that back in day, so I won't. Dooley. I know I talk about that a lot, but God dang, I want that bad boy. There's a lot of shit I want to do. I'm jealous of you being in Lake Tahoe. I want to get a fucking camper, put the doggies, get the gun, pack a cooler, get my mind right, and take a trip up to goddamn Grand Tetons and camp. I want to do it, though.
I'm not having it with the gun. I'm not having it with the gun.
Andy, I'm bringing a gun, whether you like it or not. You need one, too, at your house. You probably got people sleeping on your front porch right now. Who knows? You got three fucking kids. I got a cat and two dogs, and I'm like, fuck, what's going on down here? God.
How do you think
control
I would
your
handle,
life.
How do you think I would handle an intruder?
What do I take everything? My children are upstairs. Take my wife. Then you call me and I have to come over like a fucking man. Like, okay. No, the kids are staying here. I'll bag this cat up. It's all good.
Dude, I'm seeing lots of trucks pull boats around here, dude. I don't see a single dually. Not one, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton. Well, they're not big boats then. Well, they're not big boats.
Monster boats.
Bull fucking shit.
I want one of these formulas.
You can't. Oh, yeah, you do, homie. They're very expensive. Boats are so fucking expensive right now. They hold their value like no other, man. They really, really do. If you take care of that and you got that ton of hours on it, they hold their value. And if you don't see any dualies holding, then they're driving pussy boats. You got to have a shit-kicking truck to haul a shit-kicking boat. Write that down.
I got a Chris Craft, dude. 36
foot. Those are cool. 36 foot's a big old boat. That's a big boat, dude. That hits waves well. That goes. Is it a dual prop or just single prop?
Don't start asking me all these stupid ass questions.
Does it have two drives or one drive? You don't look at the drives in the back of the boat. Aren't you fixated on how the water moves when the boat goes? Like,
oh yeah, you know, it was going. I think it's two engines.
Is there two drives?
Two engines. Yeah,
two drives. All right. Yeah,
I'll send you a video. You'll know right away.
I could tell right away. There are probably two 454 Merc cruisers on that bad boy. Mm. That thing gets up and goes, and it holds the wake. If you have a single prop, dude, and you hit those waves, oh my god, it tears you up. But when you have dual props, like it just catches the water better. Yeah.
I thought Ty actually broke his leg because he jumped out of the boat and he hit his ankle on the prop.
No, he didn't. Andy, if you would hit his ankle on the prop, his foot would have got cut off. What the fuck are you talking about?
The engine, the boat was idle. We were like,
I know. No. It doesn't matter. He would have cut it. Dude, those things are so goddamn sharp. He would have cut his Achilles off. Well,
what's
so
the plastic thing?
The plastic thing's a little, the dive board on it. He hit his leg on the dive
underneath
board.
It. I was hitting my foot on there too.
Oh my dude, stay away from that, man. What are you doing? Why would you be? You'd have to go underneath where the platform is to hit your leg there. You stay away from that. What?
Dude, no, at you the didn't. Back no, at the didn't. Back of the boat.
You sound dumb right now. You sound dumb right now. I'm just letting you know.
The black plastic things that like spin around. That's the prop.
It's probably like chrome. It's not black, it's probably chrome. You hit your foot on the sharp prop of the dual. Are you out of your fucking mind? You would cut your leg in half. You'd have to go underneath the fucking platform and kick it. Like you'd have to purposely do
it. Well, whatever the hell it is, maybe it wasn't the prop, but it's that black thing. And I survived it.
You sound so dumb right now. I mean, like you really do,
dude.
You really sound dumb. Sean Vincent, my buddy, he was so wasted. He jumps off his thing. He cut his leg so fucking bad. You can't, dude, they are so sharp. The prop is, it's a fucking knife, dude. You ain't hitting that. You're dumb.
All right, we'll cut this out because I don't
know. No, you're not. No. We're not cutting this out. You are not cutting this out. You're keeping this in. Brody.
So.
You ain't cutting that out.
Again, Dan Bellman, he's got the Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on one side of the street. All right, the other side in Troy, he's got the Cadillac, the Buick, the GMC. Check it out online, Bellman.com, two ends. Dude, it's the black thing at the end of the boat, whatever the hell I hit it on.
You probably hit the fucking ladder, man.
It's next to the ladder, to the right and to the left of the ladder.
It's probably where you put you tie your rope on, the little thing where you tie your rope on. You're not hitting the engine, and the drive, or you're not hitting the prop. The prop would fucking cut your leg off.
Yeah.
It
wouldn't cut my leg off if I had that Daredevil hockey stuff on there.
That's a good segue for a stupid thing.
Kevlar resistant fabric. Exactly right. Give yourself a little peace of mind. Put on your Daredevil hockey equipment now. The top layer or the bottom layer or both. Whatever you want whatever you most comfortable with. And again, this is the leading company when it comes to skate laceration prevention, skate laceration protection. There's nothing else that even compares to it. So check out daredevilhockey.com. Again, use that promo code Cam and Strick. You're going to save 25%. So it's a good chunk of savings right there. All caps with Cam and Strick. Carlo Koliakovo, our boy up there in Canada, big promoter of what they do there with Daredevil Hockey. So we appreciate their support. All right, this has been DJ Smith on this edition of the Cam and Strick podcast, vacation edition. I'll be back for our next. We got some great interviews coming up too, Cam.
Hell yeah.
Looking forward to some of these big boys that we have coming
up.
We
get the big boys on, and everybody knows it. That's the bottom line.
Damn straight.
And he might be a nerd, but we get the big boys on.
Cam may be a Neanderthal, but we get the big
boys. We get the motherfucking big boys on.
Cam may be just a big ass meathead, but we get the
I don't give a shit. I'm winning awards out here, the puppies.
Oh my God. Yeah, no one else even entered. You put balloons on your dog.
It's incredibly horrible how I won that. Balloons. Mm. They look terrible.
Jesus.
They're cute.
Hey, walking down the street with balloons on your dog.
Yeah, everybody else had not. Okay, go ahead. Let's get out of here.
Until next time.